United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Let's go! boxing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll-free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is 11 minutes after the hour of 12 o'clock here on the 24th of October. The time is flying by so fast. Don't know how we can slow this train down. I mean, do you guys realize that it was snowing up in northern Ohio today? They had like 6 inches of snow. Their schools are closed in Geauga County. We have coats and sweaters on. We have turned the air off. I need to put socks on. There is a problem here. And, you know, we're going to talk about Alzheimer's. We're going to talk about money today. It's Community Day. But since we're talking about community, do you realize Thanksgiving is almost here?
Isn't that crazy?
Yes. Isn't that weird?
Absolutely crazy.
So it's Christmas.
Who?
So it's Christmas.
Christmas is every day.
There you go.
In studio with me, I have Stacey Adger.
Hello,
Stacey
hello.
Adger is representing the Alzheimer's
Network.
Mm-hmm. And then, Pat, you know that every fourth Thursday of the month, somebody from the credit union comes by. And now we've had Gwendolyn Fish, we've had Pastor Williams, we've had Pastor Crum, we've had Pastor Simon, but today you get Pastor McNeil.
Ooh.
And he is the forerunner. He is the one who's on the treadmill and on the hamster wheel, and he's still climbing and he's still going.
Is
and
that
he's
what
still,
I'm doing?
Yes, what you're doing. I'm gonna call it like I see it. Oh, I gotta say, they told me that the cold weather outside is global warming.
Is that what that is?
That's what that is.
Well, then that explains the snow flurries I saw in Briar Hill this morning.
No. That was not snow. That was a little precipitation.
Mm-hmm.
It's Alzheimer's, so you might as well call it what you want to.
You know, it very well could be. Lord knows.
In studio, I want to get to talk to Stacey because she's got to go to work, but she's a part of the Alzheimer's Network, and I ran into her at the Oktoberfest, which you guys know that I'm really big in Boardman Rotary. And the Alzheimer's Network is located on Market Street, and they go out and educate people about the disease of Alzheimer's.
And I've been, let me see, I've been a board member.
About time you got back to radio.
I've done this a time or two.
I know.
It's been about 3 years since I've been on the Alzheimer's Network board, and it has just been fantastic. Dorothy Bartow asked me years ago, and it was funny because I used to interview her when I had a talk show about Alzheimer's and everything, and then she asked me to be on the board, and I've been there for about 3 years.
When I grow up, I want to be like Stacey Adger, and I'm going to say that.
You poor child. I've got
to say this out loud because I couldn't say it. I didn't want to say it before we got on air. I want to publicly acknowledge Stacy for her support of me over the years. When she was at YTV, when she was along the way, no matter what I did, she always stepped up, she always encouraged, and she always, wherever she is, she opens doors for others to walk in.
Oh, well, thank you.
And, you know, sometimes we criticize folks when they do bad, but sometimes we don't acknowledge them when they do good. And Stacy is in a little bit of everything. When I go down to the Arms Museum, when you look at genealogy, when you look at Alzheimer's Network, when you look at, when does she find time to do all of this? And she's always selfless. And I say that. She's selfless in all that she does. There are very, very few people that are just selfless. And they're willing to put down themselves for someone else. In a lot of ways, some ways that are publicized and some ways are not. And so I want to say thank you to you.
Oh, my goodness. Now you've got me on the verge of tears.
Yes. Yes, my job is done.
But I tell you what, you have done a great job, and you've just taken it and run with it. So I just am proud of you and everything
that you've
done.
But you guys, you were at White. I mean, and I'm going off subject. We're going back to Alzheimer's, but I don't want to forget.
No, you didn't.
I have to. I don't want to forget because you know I don't have Alzheimer's, but I do have sometimes old timers, which makes a difference.
Or sometimers.
Or sometimers, absolutely.
All right.
But you need to give honor to whom honor is due, and you need to give credit and let people know how great they are.
That's a biblical
when
concept.
They're flower, when they can smell the flowers and
right
hear
now.
It.
Right.
And as we talk about people with Alzheimer's, you need to love on people while they yet know that you're loving on them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because right now there's treatments and there's a lot of research going on with Alzheimer's. But when your loved one, when your parent, when your uncles, when your aunts, yeah, they got on your nerve, they beat your tail, they did a lot. But if you don't give them their flowers now, if they accidentally get Alzheimer's, they won't know you and they won't know what you're talking about when you say thank you.
No, not at all. I remember watching, and I never really appreciated how wonderful this woman was. I was in my teens, and I had a cousin. Her name was Vashti. And I found out that she did some work with Jews that were coming back into the States after the Holocaust and was trying to get them acclimated. Well, by the time I was old enough to understand that and to start asking her questions, she had already started to develop dementia and Alzheimer's. And I would go to the nursing home and, you know, check on her, visit her, and this vibrant woman with a brain, with a heart, with a compassion. I watched her over the years deteriorate to the point of just being a mass of bones and flesh lying on a bed. And that was, I think, the hardest thing. And that part of the reason that I wanted to get involved with the Alzheimer's.
How old was she?
Oh, goodness. She was, I think she passed and she was in her 70s. She was younger than my mom. Yeah.
A lot of people are younger.
Yeah.
I have a young lady, and there, it's a disease, but there are many things that can cause dementia and Alzheimer's.
Correct.
As you guys know, I was diagnosed with MS, and I have a girlfriend who was diagnosed, and she has Alzheimer's on the onset of MS, or because of MS. And I've watched her deteriorate. Her mind.
I didn't know you were diagnosed with MS.
How
long ago was
it's been
that?
Years. It's been eight,
oh, really?
5 years, 6 years.
You don't look like it. You don't look like it.
Because God is good.
Yeah, all the time.
Because God is good. And I thank God for it, but that doesn't mean tomorrow it may be different.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Tracy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting you have these guests on here today.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. Go ahead,
Alabama. I need to let, because people are looking around and saying, who is that? This is Alabama. Hi, Alabama. Go ahead.
Alabama.
Hey, I got a friend of mine that I graduated with from, he wound up going to Johns Hopkins, which is, you know, real, I guess, a great hospital. We had a good conversation yesterday, and he was just telling me about the problems with Medicare that have kicked in, started October 1st, and some of them started October 1st of last year. And he was just telling me how they're going to be penalized for the more elderly people they treat, the more they're going to be demerited. And also, he was just saying
Alabama, do me a favor. Let's take this to the back end and talk about the disease on the front end and go into the legislative part of this on the back end, because what will happen is we won't get the information out. Is that cool with you? He's talking about the new Affordable Health Care Act and how this is going to impact people.
I'm going to let you get away with that, Tracy. But it is the Bill Green show, but I'm going to let you have it.
I know. And you can have the show back in a few minutes. But I want to get to the meat, because what happens is there are a lot of things that cause Alzheimer's and cause dementia. And from my understanding, there's various forms of dementia.
There are, and it's a lot of research that is still being done and that needs to be done to try and ascertain what is what when it comes to dealing with these various diseases. Some of the warning signs of Alzheimer's, it's one thing I wanted to touch on real quickly. There's like 7 different warning signs. One is asking the same question over and over, repeating the same story word for word again and again. Forgetting how to cook or how to make repairs or how to play cards, activities that you routinely do.
How many
is
7? So if I get 3 out of 7, what is that?
Well, that's the thing. Hey.
Take it.
Losing the ability to pay bills.
Oh,
something
that's 4 out of 4.
Okay, getting lost in familiar surroundings or misplacing household objects, neglecting to bathe or wear the same clothes over and over again, and insisting that you bathe. And then relying on somebody else to make decisions that you used to make before. Oftentimes it's gradual, the change, and sometimes it just catches up on you and you don't realize what you're looking at dealing when you deal with your loved one. But when you have something like this and you're looking at the 7 different warning signs in black and white, it makes it easier to say, there's a problem here.
Stacey, I've got people in the chat room. And they're talking about they're messed up because I think they got 7 out of 7, too.
Most of them got some of those things you just talked about.
Exactly.
I know I do.
Exactly, but it doesn't mean that we're all affected by dementia. Maybe the engineer that I'm looking at outside the window is.
Him, yes.
He's got issues. But and another thing, we, unfortunately, a lot of African Americans have hypertension, but we also have diabetes. And oftentimes we don't do what we need to do to keep the diabetes in check and under control.
Exactly.
My father, perfect example, he was diagnosed with dementia and Alzheimer's. We have a family history of it. We were seeing things, and it's like, okay, it's coming because his father had it. So we're bracing for that. We had to place him in a nursing home for a couple of different other health issues and everything. And he was on the 2 major drugs that they usually do to prescribe and deal with dementia and Alzheimer's. A psychologist came in and changed his medicine without me knowing, but changed him to something else. Mm-hmm. My father's cleared up. But it was a combination of different things. It was a combination of the medication working against him, because not all medicines work the same for people. But also, by that time, his diabetes had gotten under control because the nursing staff was there making sure he took his insulin, he got coverage, his sugar wasn't getting too high. A lot of people need to realize also that uncontrolled diabetes
will cause
presents.
Dementia
presents itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there, and those of you, and let me say this as a disclaimer and a warning. There are a lot of people who are diabetic.
Correct.
And you do not check your sugar levels as you should.
Nice.
You do not take your insulin as you should. And I am allergic to needles too.
I know that's right.
I am. And I'm not diabetic, but you have to do what you have to do, because when you don't take your check your blood sugar, and when you don't take your insulin, it causes a form of dementia, and sometimes you snap back and sometimes you don't. Don't play with your mind and your eyesight and your health based upon you don't like getting stuff checked. And there's enough free stuff for diabetes out there that you don't have to worry about insurance or nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Exactly. Let me see. There's just
so much.
You know, you've got different behaviors. People may notice personality changes in their loved one. You go in to help them, say they're in their house by themselves. You go in to help, and then they start saying, well, you know, I'm missing this, that, or the other thing. Did you take it? Or why are you trying to do that? Or what happened to this? Last time I saw it, it was here when you were here. And that's part of the disease that people don't understand. And then also...
Are you saying they get agitated with the relatives?
No, sometimes they do. They really, really do. I actually had my father swing at me.
Oh, my.
But that, you know, you have to remember it's part of the disease and part of, you know, and not everybody gets physical, but, you know, they're defensive because I think at some point they don't understand. They know that there's something changing, but they don't know what exactly it is. Mm-hmm. And so when you reach out your hand to help, it might be perceived as you're trying to take away their ability
Absolutely.
To do what they do.
Let me ask this. Mm-hmm. Now, you have early onset dementia.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was talking about my girlfriend who is in her late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like watching the light of the eye go out.
Out. Exactly.
And she has it really bad. Then I have an uncle who has senility. Now, is that a form of dementia also based upon age? Because you look at he thinks he's 91. So with the senility and Alzheimer's, is that dementia? Is that a part of it, or is it just getting older?
You know, dementia is sort of like an umbrella term for a number of different
right.
medical conditions that are all pertaining to the mind and perception and understanding and that type of thing. It very well could be. I'm more along the lines of Alzheimer's. But you have so many different things. You've got.
So what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia?
Alzheimer's is something that you can actually pretty much diagnose. It's getting
ahead of time.
Not necessarily ahead of time. There are some markers that, you know, you can see in a person and how they're doing and sort of evaluate them. We have different specialists here in this area, not as many as we need, that are able to diagnose.
Do they have medical diagnosis? I mean, such as I saw something on television about a brain scan that shows plaque and all this stuff in the brain.
And that is one thing, because it shows the constriction of the arteries and the plaque buildup in the arteries and therefore the lack of flow of blood to
mm-hmm.
the brain. So that is part of it. There are tools to diagnose, but it's, you know, specialists that deal with diagnosing people with Alzheimer's, they have the ability to sort of separate dementia from Alzheimer's
okay.
and the different
so it, it
levels
is different.
Of it.
Yeah, it is different.
It is. Like I said, dementia tends to be more of an umbrella term. Alzheimer's is a specific disease.
So what is Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's disease.
What is it? I mean, what does it – what – because, you know, you hear people say that I was diagnosed with onset early detected Alzheimer's. What does that mean? And when you go home, I mean, a lot of times when you get diagnosed with stuff, a lot of times you just say the doctor's crazy, you ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have Alzheimer's, you need to prepare for
correct
for future.
Correct.
And you need to find out, because remember, your money, your long-term health care.
Well, I don't have to pay for it if you save me money.
No, because you get a check every month, and you got to make sure whoever gets the check is at least going to put you in a clean diaper.
Okay. From that standpoint,
I mean, you got to make sure you have to make sure that you're going, because you don't every day you're losing your diminishing capacity.
Yes. Yes.
And how do you prepare? How does family prepare and plan? I mean, you know, we fight when they die, let alone fight when they live it.
I know. And see, one of the main things that people need to do is once they start seeing some changes with their loved one, and I'm not trying to be an alarmist, because everybody ages, we all change and we age differently, but when you start noticing changes and it looks like it might be something cognitive, like dementia, like Alzheimer's, you need to get that person diagnosed so that you know exactly what you're dealing with. And then a whole bunch of other things kick in, like you have to consider out, like you said, financial things.
Yeah.
Where is the money
going?
Where is the person going? Do they have insurance or whatever that will cover that? What happens to their assets? In the state of Ohio, a lot of people don't realize that the laws have changed. I think it used to be 2 years or maybe three that if you didn't change the ownership of your house or something like that, it would revert.
They would take it.
They'll take it to the state.
But it's 5 years.
It's 5 years now.
They're actually looking at possibly extending that and making it longer. You can't, and I was at a Alzheimer's financial legal workshop last night and happened to hear this, and it sort of threw me. Any type of gift, if you have a huge amount, well, it's not going to be me, but say, for instance, I've got $60,000 and you're my nephew, and I want to give it to you. Mm-hmm. I have to do that before
5 years.
Because what they can do is look at that and go, now, you know, you're just taking that money and you're intentionally hiding it to mitigate your responsibility. So, therefore, we're going to penalize you. And as a result, for every $6,000 that you've given away, that is 1 month that you have to come out of your pocket to pay for the person's stay in the nursing facility or whatever. So there's a whole bunch of legal issues, and that's why it is important to start early. If you see some changes, you need to get the person diagnosed and then and start a game plan. And I'll say this,
just even if you don't have a diagnosis with Alzheimer's, when you get 55, if you have hard assets, then you need to develop a trust.
Yes.
You need to go to a trust attorney. You need to put all of your assets in the trust, pay yourself from the trust, pay the taxes on the trust, so that you can shield your assets. Because what happens is you have this beautiful home that you've put your life into. I promise you they will sell it for 10 cents on a dollar so that they can pay $5,000 a month for you to sit there and drool.
Well, Tracy, also you have to make that trust irrevocable.
Absolutely. That's South Carolina.
Okay.
People are calling in. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. And, Matt, your mic is on, and so is 261. The number is 347-945-5229. I've got Stacey Adger with me, and she is on the board of the Alzheimer's Network here locally. But I'm quite sure those of you who are listening to us abroad, there is an Alzheimer's Network or some kind of organization by you where you can get more information.
And that's the main thing, is to make sure you call a local Alzheimer's agency. We're the Alzheimer's Network and Referral Service. There's another national organization. All of them are designed to help you. You have to look and figure out what's the best. And then they deal with people that have Alzheimer's. So if you call them and you're just like in the beginning stages of dealing with all this, we can direct you to sources where you can go to get information, where you can go to get answers, where you can go to get help. Mm-hmm. So, and the main thing is to know that you are not in this by yourself. Our group, we have support groups so that people in this area can go and sit and talk with other people.
Does that help?
Yes, because at times you just feel so isolated, so alone. You are so caught up in caregiving for your loved one, especially if that loved one's at home. Mm-hmm. You tend to lose sight of yourself because you're trying to do so much. It's like, in some cases, depending on how advanced the disease is, it's like you're taking care of a child all over again, but the dynamics have changed because it's your parent or some adult relative, and you've got to treat them as an adult, but at the same time, you've got to remember that there's that diminished capacity. And it's just – so there are times where you just feel like you're out there on your own. So support groups are very helpful, and they give you a different way of looking at things, but it also gives you an outlet to realize, you know, there are other people out here going through this. It might not be exactly identical, but there are other people out here going through this, and maybe I can get some help and some strength from them.
Hey, Matt, your mic's on.
This is 261. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Hey, what's the point of them increasing the years, just break it down, hiding money? What is the point of that? Are people actually getting away that they have to increase the years?
Yeah.
In some respects, they are, but
what are they getting away with?
No, so what is happening is you have to realize what happens is people do not plan for extended long term care, and it costs approximately $5,500 a month for long term care in a Ohio state skilled nursing facility. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. What people were doing was they were taking their assets, doing a quick claim deed, transferring their cars and their money into their kids' name and allowing the state to pick it up.
Correct.
Okay.
So they sent it out 2 years.
So these are well-to-do folks is doing this.
No. Because you have to understand your house. Where we fail to realize is the house that you live in, if you are not married and have a spouse in that house or a child in that house, when you go into a long-term skilled nursing facility, they automatically take it from you.
That's if one of the individuals in the
house.
If
you don't have the money to pay for it. If you do not have the money to pay for your long-term care, that money has to come from somewhere, and you have to go on Medicaid. You can't have any resource or any collateral going in there.
Right. And once you're on Medicaid, you have $1,500 a month. Pretty much that's it that you can have in any account.
Correct, and that's collectively. And that's what they call spend out.
With people not marrying today, I guess you ain't got too much worry about that.
No, the problem is they're living alone. They may not be living alone. Just because you're not living with your spouse does not mean you're living in a house by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if that house is in your, what'd you say, Paul?
If I got a home that's worth $50,000 or something like that, now I know they might not sell it for $50,000, but whatever that house costs, they get the money, they use the money. It's their money because they're taking care of me. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, why would you want to hide money and just throw somebody on somebody else?
Well, you're not hiding it, but what we're saying is what you are doing is that you're reallocating it so that you can be taken care of properly. Because when I say this, you need to know how to cover your assets, even your insurance policies.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. It's a problem. Listen, I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The mics will be off on the chat room. We'll be right back.
Boardman. Hey, Paul, are you still there?
I think he's on the local line there.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, because I was going to tell him, they'll take your house from you. You know, if it's still in your name, they'll take every asset from you. And like what Tracy said, they'll sell it for 10 cents on the dollar and whatever they can get out of it just to make a quick buck. Now, if you reallocate all of your finances and all of your possessions, then you can get more out of it and be able to extend that care a little longer, providing you have normal children.
Yeah, yeah. And see, for the situation that I have, because, you know, I have to do an assessment on all assets for all the tenants, insurance policies, anything that can be sold or traded in or redeemed for cash, I got to count it as an asset, and then it has to be imputed at 2% to determine how much interest they would have gotten imputed interest and added into their income. So
I'm a
good chunk of change.
You went a little over my head. Could you explain imputed interest to me? That's kind of a new thing.
What it is if you have over $5,000 in assets, say for instance you got you have a CD in the bank, and it's worth $10,000. Okay.
Okay.
And you got. Say 2% interest on it, and that was it. But if you have a bank account and you got $5,000 in it, and the savings account with another $5,000, so your total assets are $20,000. And what I do is I count that interest that you made for that year, but also I've got to add on an additional 2% interest off of the total amount over $5,000. So that would be another $15,000 times 2%, and then I'd add it into your income.
Oh, okay. All right. I see what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah. Which could be the difference between you being able to get an apartment in the complex or not being able to get one.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you put it in a irrevocable trust, you don't have to worry about it. They can't touch it. because you can't get your hands on it. But, you know, even with that, you got to make sure that you're doing it or giving it to the child or a relative that you trust.
And that's, you know, that's the whole key right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot that that's what you – I mean, I knew that – I forgot that you dealt with those people, Sal. I know that you were dealing with these complexes, but I forgot what it was for. So, yeah, you would have some pretty good insight in that.
It's wild how much, you know, how much they do in order to make sure the folks don't have any – don't miss any, you know, make – and on top of that, you don't have to worry about them not finding out about the money now. Because they'll find it. They will find it.
Oh, they have to, absolutely.
Yeah, because they have it's called the EIB system, Enterprise Verification, Enterprise Income Verification. And if you've worked anywhere or if you've gotten any kind of monies or anything like that, they're going to find it. Because the IRS talks to HUD, and HUD talks to Social Security, and so they have all that written down. If you're in the system, they're going to find it.
Now, what would they do? Let's say that you have a child that you trust who is trustworthy, and you like have a pre-death will, okay? And you just make it's not yours anymore. You just pass over all of your assets, everything, to your child. Can they come after those assets legally?
Yeah.
Really?
If you don't do it, it has to be done 2 years, and in some cases 5 years before you go into a facility.
That makes sense to me, but, I mean, then again, how would you know? I would think that it would deal with diagnosis. I would think that if you did that after a diagnosis, they would legally have rights to come after it, but pre-diagnosis they shouldn't.
That's correct. Hold on, guys. I've got to come back up. The number is 347-945-5229, South Carolina. Matt, hey, who's the private caller in the chat room? You know the one with the unlisted number.
That's Beasley.
Hey, Brown. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? And so we're talking about the Alzheimer's Network that's here locally. And, pardon me?
What a downer, but so real.
Well, it's a real thing. You got to deal with it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like the elephant in the room. You have to deal with it. It's going to be there whether you deal with it or not.
And even if, you know, we need to, even though it's uncomfortable in planning and dealing with things that are not pleasant, it's a part of life. And I just left. I teach a Bible study at a nursing home locally every Thursday. And a lady came into my Bible study and told everybody to shut up and get out and go home because her husband needs to get up. He needs to go to bed. He needs to get up and go to work tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And he was adamant. She was very, very adamant in my Bible study for us to get up, get out. Because her husband got to go to work tomorrow morning. And don't sit on her porch because every time we sit on her porch, we break it down.
Okay.
Oh, my.
Not realizing that people – yeah, Matt.
Before we get off the beaten path here, I just wanted to ask a question while we're still on the actual disease, if that's all right.
Sure.
How specific is Alzheimer's when you're talking about being able to call it Alzheimer's disease? Let me give you an example. My father, and I just started thinking about this in the last couple of years. He died, not anything Alzheimer's related, but the more I think about it, the worse I feel about the way I used to treat him, because he used to be able to ask me a question about a specific person, let's just say Michael Jackson, okay? And he couldn't remember the name Michael Jackson, but he knew every single brother's name. He knew the Thriller album. He knew ABC. He knew everything. And he said, "What's that guy's name?" And I would let it go, and I'd go, "It's Michael Jackson, Dad." And he would go, "Yeah, that's it. One time I called him out on it. I think, believe it or not, I think it was Tina Turner. He was trying to call. He knew Ike. He knew, you know, shaking her butt and all this stuff and the dress. He knew everything. And I go, "Dad," I go, "it's Tina Turner. You know that. Stop playing with me." And he went off the deep end on me. Is it so specific where you can remember every single thing except for the main topic of what you're trying to come up with?
Sometimes it's just how it presents itself. And first of all, I heard you say you were feeling bad. You were not a doctor. You did not know what was going on with your father. It does sound like there was some type of maybe dementia, maybe Alzheimer's, because he was having problems with a name. I want to say it was more of some form of probably more of a form of dementia. Was he able to function pretty much on his own with the exception of that?
Oh, absolutely. Everything was pretty much on. I mean, I've told Tracy this before. I have a little ADD issues here and there. But, yeah, and he did too. But for the most part, yeah, he paid his bills. He lived on his own, and he died of a stroke, not anything Alzheimer's related.
But, see, that's just it. The Alzheimer's is totally – that's what I was getting at the beginning. Alzheimer's is totally different from senility. Like Stacy said, there are many, many forms of dementia. So we call everything dementia, but the disease of, because Alzheimer's is almost like a reverse of, it's a short-term memory loss in a gradual way where you forget anything all the way back to where you go back to childhood and fetus in a lot of cases.
Tracy?
Yeah.
My grandmother was diagnosed with dementia and then full-blown Alzheimer's for a while before she died, because she lived with it so long, because she was pretty much healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But she was diagnosed, I remember, when I was 10. It was the hardest thing for my family, and forgive me if I started getting choked up. I remember her being the sweetest lady, you know, with making the best banana cream pies. She didn't live here. She lived in Alabama, and she would travel at least once or twice a year to come up and see us. And then my grandfather started recognizing that something was wrong, like she would misplace things and she would be very forgetful. He sent her up here permanently to live. And then the family started taking care of her. And the hardest thing we ever had to deal with this was when my grandfather was murdered. And we traveled back down to Alabama for his funeral. And she was sitting there, and she did not know who the man was in a casket. And she didn't know why she was there, why she needed to be there. For her going from a sweet church lady, never cussing, to being belligerent, going off with people, not recognizing us, wandering off. There were plenty of times as a teenager she'd leave the house while my mom was at work, and I would have to go walk the streets to find her. We found her at the drugstore across the street. The police had to come and bring her back, and It was very, very hard. It was very stressful. It was literally like taking care of a baby, and it got so hard that the family really broke down because we decided we couldn't do it anymore when she became bedridden and she had to go into a long-term facility.
But, you know, I've had my aunt lived so long. You know, you saw, I mean, because she was in good health.
Yes.
But her mind just diminished.
Yeah.
And it just walked backwards so slowly to where I remember her telling my mom, can you tell him to go home so I can go to bed? And she was talking about her husband.
Mm-hmm. They lose the ability to recognize and understand, and it's painful. What this young girl, I hear so much pain in this young lady's voice, and I can empathize. Because, like I said, my cousin that was the one that dealt with the Holocaust survivors, they found her out on the street one day walking up and down the street in a slip in the middle of winter. I mean, this disease is just absolutely horrible because it takes the person you love that you've known and changes them. But it also, it robs the family, but it also robs that person of their ability to care for themselves, their ability to be the person that they used to be. What your family went through is hard, and, you know, I heard you say that the grandmother was taken down south so that she could go to her husband's funeral. And in some respects,
and I don't have a clue.
Yeah. In some respects, I understand the need for the appearance to have that person there, but sometimes it's just not beneficial.
They have no clue what's going on around them.
No.
seem kind of pointless then.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And then you actually, sometimes you don't need to shock them like that, because sometimes they have moments of clarity, and it's quick.
Correct.
I think my aunt and my mother, they were in denial for so long. They figured that because she still was having some lucid moments at that time, that if she'll remember, but
yeah,
they were in denial for a long time about everything.
No, and that's what makes it hard.
She was the fourth of four daughters, and all of them, every single one of them, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Stacey, before I go to, because I only have you for about 10 more minutes before you're going to run out the door.
Okay.
Tell me what the Alzheimer's Network does.
What we do is we provide support, we provide information. We are a volunteer organization, we're nonprofit, and what we do is we try and make sure that information gets out there to the people that needs it. If you have an issue, if you are just lost, you're struggling, you don't know which way to go, you're seeing changes in a loved one, you want to get information and you don't know where to turn, give us a call. Our number, we're right on Market Street. Our number is 330-788-9755. Or we have a 1-800 number. It's 1-866-822-2102. We are on Facebook, Alzheimer's Network, Youngstown, Ohio. We have a website, alzohio.org. We can provide you with information. We have support groups that are ongoing. We offer, like I said, I was at a legal seminar last night. We have a caregiver series. We do 3 caregiver series, usually in the fall, and that looks at legal aspects, new advances, and then also the symptoms of the diseases. And I know the last one is going to be this Sunday at St. Charles and Boardman. That's something that you have to pre-register for. We do offer speakers. We can come and speak to your group.
Your churches? Your organizations?
Churches,
nonprofits?
Organizations, yes. We,
Rotaries?
Yes.
Lions Club, Kiwanis?
The main thing is to get the word out that there is help, that you are not in this by yourself, and to give you information. And there's, we'll come to you. We will come to you.
I want to thank Stacey for coming on. The Alzheimer's Network, they're always there. And all you have to do is call. If I call 211, will I still get you also?
I do believe you should be
okay.
able to. Don't ask me.
Okay.
I'm not certain. But like I said, you know, we are there. And actually, our board president, the woman that's over at Dorothy Bartow, does a lot through Help Hotline.
Okay.
So she can be contacted. Yeah,
211.
So there you
there
go.
There it is.
There's 211. That's Dorothy.
And yes, sir.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
And this might not be, you might not be able to answer, but I just want to know, I'm curious, how long does this thing last once you've been diagnosed with it?
It depends.
Some people I've seen from diagnosis to, you know, the end stages, it goes so fast that you're just sitting there going, what happened? But then again, you also have to remember, it depends on how quickly they were into the disease they were diagnosed.
Okay.
Because my aunt was 30 years.
30 years with that disease?
Yeah.
My cousin was almost, goodness, I was at high school, and she died in 2001.
Yeah. It all depends on the progression. It depends on the diagnosis. It depends on the type. Because within Alzheimer's, there are different types of Alzheimer's.
Really?
I have a question.
Health issues, too, also play a part in it.
Go ahead, Brown.
What can someone do to try to stop this from happening to you? Are there herbs? Is there some type of activity? Is there, you know,
listen to Tracy and Friends?
Listen to Tracy and Friends. There you go. I wish it was that simple. You know, diet and nutrition play a big part in your overall health, so that is part of it, to make sure you're healthy, as healthy as can be. But you know, I remember my grandfather, you know, they would whisper back in the day, he's got hardening of the arteries or this, that, and the other thing. It's a lot of, some of it, too, seems to be hereditary. because
I was going to ask that next. If someone has a genetic predisposition, is this like, you know, you just have it's going to come regardless?
It
or the
may.
Chances are much greater than the rest of the population?
Exactly. If you already are showing, if you already have a family history and there is some predisposition there based on your family history, you need to do what you need to do in regards to making sure that you're taking care of whatever arrangements and everything, because somewhere down the road you might contract it. I felt so bad. I'm dealing with another relative, and you know they're dealing with their mother, and they were talking to her, and they had made a pact. They said, "Now, Mom, once you get to the point where we start expressing concerns and we start seeing this, that, and the other thing, you're not going to fight us when we step in and do what we need to do, right?" And at the time, she said, "No, I would expect you to do that. You are my children. You are looking out for my best interest." But see, now we're here.
Mm.
We are here. But see, the problem is that Mom doesn't see that we are here.
And the rationale. No.
And doesn't realize who you are. Right. Because your short-term memory, as I've watched these people back, you've only been here 20 years. They're talking to their sister and brother and their kid that they played 50 years ago.
Yeah, in some cases. But the short-term memory, that's one of the immediate signs. You know, you can see that is affected and people aren't, you know, they're not functioning like they should. But, you know, and the hardest thing was trying to deal with one of my relatives and trying to get her to understand that Mom is in a different place mentally than where she had been 5 minutes ago, 5 hours ago, 5 days ago. And what most of us look at as rational, logical things, they don't see it that way.
No.
And we have to be, if you're a caregiver, you have to adjust to how Mom or how Dad is going to be that day.
So you saying that the agreement that the lady you talked about, she probably didn't even remember that?
No, because, and then also you have to remember, she thinks she's fine.
Right.
So why are you here trying to take my checkbook? What do you mean I can't balance my checkbook? Why are you piddling with my pills? I can do my pills, you know, and they don't see that there has been a change because it's them.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of us around it can see it, but they don't.
And dealing with them is taking their driver's license, taking the keys to the car.
Lord.
I know some people.
Moving them out of their house.
There you go.
Telling them that they can't sleep in the bedroom upstairs because they can't climb the stairs. You know, telling them that they can't cook anymore and they were a cook. You would be surprised as you have aging parents and when they have dementia and or Alzheimer's.
Mm.
Woo.
You got some fight.
See, my aunt get backhanded.
Talk about a war.
Ooh.
Your aunt?
Yeah.
My aunt, her youngest daughter, who she was the closest with, told her she couldn't live in her apartment anymore. And they got in a real bad argument, and she backhanded my aunt, never hit her before in her life, and backhanded her.
But see, that is part of the disease.
It is.
And it's the anger from inside lashing out because they don't understand what all's going on, and you're taking away what they were able to do. You're taking away their independence by trying to step in and do for them, and they don't realize it's with the best intentions.
Mm. So it looked to them as aggression, apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, have you tried to take the keys away from a person who, I mean, they drive a bike?
My daughter did take them away.
But your daughter is one way, but your daddy is another.
Yeah.
Talk about a war.
That would be another story.
The only thing that saved me from that whole battle was Dad was having different health issues, and he ended up going into the hospital, then got placed into long-term care. So I avoided that whole battle. My father has driven for years, even without a license when he was young.
They started that too.
Yeah, I know. So the battle was on, and that was something I was dreading, you know?
I'm going to thank you, Stacey, for coming. You have to come back.
Okay, I'm going to bring Dorothy next time because some of these questions.
No, that's all right. You got to come back. You got to come back and talk about genealogy.
I would love to. I mean, we've got some fascinating stuff coming up, and I'm so elated. Found a branch of my family that we've been looking for years. Now they're all, like, coming out of the woodwork, and it's just been tremendous.
Stacey does a major job when it comes to genealogy and dealing with ancestry. And so we're going to have her come on and talk to us about how, especially as being an African-American, you know, you get back to Grandma and Nana and Grandpa, and it, like, stops, and you don't know where to go.
Yeah,
and she's got some tips to help us out. I'm going to take a break at the top of the hour. When Pastor McNeil is here with me, and we're going to continue having a conversation with him. I want to thank her again and the Alzheimer's Network. Their phone number is 330-788-9755. It is a nonprofit organization, and they are there to help. So all you have to do, if you reach out, they'll reach back. We'll be right back.
WSOM.
Hey, Diva, are you still there?
Yes.
I have a question about the subject at hand. You said you dealt with quite a few family members with Alzheimer's.
Just my grandmother. Her sisters had Alzheimer's too, but they lived in Alabama, so I just dealt with my grandmother.
All right, let me ask this question, because I wanted to ask it of the woman that she had on there. She was talking about, you know, to an Alzheimer's patient, things were normal to them every day, and basically where they got agitated was when somebody didn't allow them to do something because they weren't capable, like balancing a checkbook or driving or something to that effect, because they didn't realize that, you know, things have changed. So if they were to literally say, what do you mean I can't drive? And they walked out to go drive their car, and suddenly it was a different car from what they remembered. What would that do? I mean, was that a daily thing where they would look at something and think that people were trying to trick them? How does that work?
Yeah, my grandmother at times she was very lucid and she would be fine, but the times that she wasn't lucid, yeah, she would think that we were trying to trick her. She didn't drive. She never drove, so that wasn't a problem or a concern to us. But as far as, like, she had this silverware set that her mother had passed on to her, and she would take pieces from the silverware set and hide them or do something with them, and she would accuse everyone of stealing it. She forgot that she would take it and put it somewhere else, and she accused everybody else of stealing it. And then she would come to a lucid point, and then she'll remember, and then somebody remember, well, Mom or Grandma, you went off on us, you know, blah, blah, blah. You thought we stole it. And then she would apologize, but then she'll go right back into her non-lucid state and forget all about it, and then it'll start all over again. So we got to the point where if she wasn't harming herself and she wasn't harming anyone else, we just let her be.
Yeah, Alzheimer's to me is it is probably the worst disease you can get. I think it's worse than cancer myself, because the breakdown of the mind is got to be just an awful thing to go through. Like, I'm tremendously ADD. You could be talking to me, and I will be looking right at you, shaking my head up and down, and the only thing I'm thinking about, and it's not my personal choice to think about it. Really, I want to concentrate on what you're saying, and I have to push myself to. But, you know, all of a sudden at the end of the conversation, I have no idea what you said, but I know how to fix the oil leak on my car. You know what I mean? And then I'll have conversations like that, walk away, and then somebody will say to me, well, we just talked about that a couple hours ago. And so I think, you know, in my mind, I might have these issues too. The whole mental breakdown part of it is awful. It's absolutely awful.
Well, because of my diagnosis of epilepsy, I suffer from short-term memory loss, so I can surely understand where you're coming from. But for Alzheimer's, it's completely different, because in that moment, they don't know who they're talking to or who they, you know, like I'll know who I'm talking to. Like, you'll know who you're talking to. You can remember their name. But at that moment, in some instances, they really don't recognize the person who was in front of them. It could be their children, their spouse, someone they've known all their life, and they have no clue. And it's like talking to a virtual stranger.
And you're saying that could happen right in the middle of a conversation?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awful.
For some people, like dementia, like my mother, my grandmother's dementia, when it was first dementia, she would be lucid earlier in the day, but as the day dragged on and she was doing a lot and she would tire herself out, then she would get worse.
The sundowner effect.
Yeah. And then
my secretary was talking about that this morning.
sometimes she would be non-lucid in a conversation, and then all of a sudden she'll say something, and she'll be like, "Hey, remember when such and such happened?" And you'll get excited because you're like, "Yeah, oh my gosh, she's remembering." And then in the next instant, who are you? What you doing here?
Get out of my refrigerator.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Who's chilling are you? Y'all better go and find your mamas. Get out of my house somewhere. I don't know y'all. I'm calling the police. It was the hardest thing as kids because, like, wait a minute, Grandma, you just told us to come in and get something to eat.
You know, I had the opportunity to visit a 140-year young lady a couple days ago. My daughter had a project for college where she had to go and interview and take pictures of somebody over 90, and we were fortunate to find this lady. And man, what a wealth of information! The
Did
thing
you
was,
say 40 years old,
104.
Oh, okay.
And wonderful. And she would go through what she used to do. She was a professional high jumper and won all these championships and the whole deal. And it was a great conversation. And then right towards the end, she started repeating all of those things. Is Alzheimer's like a premature aging disease? I understand that I think it's hereditary. I think it's more to deal with your genealogy. But is that what Alzheimer's is? It's taking aging and just pushing it forward? Is that what it is?
No, because aging is totally different. When you have Alzheimer's, you actually are losing, your brain is shrinking. Your brain is literally shrinking. As with age, it does do that. You lose off cells and stuff, but it shrinks at a faster rate, and it affects your mind differently than with aging, because I don't know how I could put it where you could just understand it, because Alzheimer's.
No, I think I know where you're getting.
Mm-hmm. It can affect the person at any age. I think somebody in their 30s can end up dealing with dementia, and depending on the person, it can progress rapidly.
You're saying like in old age, you tend to have memory shut down or cells shut down, and you don't have the function in the brain. You're saying with Alzheimer's, it's an actual disease where you're actually losing brain matter. Is that where you're going at?
Your brain mass is shrinking. That's how the doctors put it to us. Like, your brain is shrinking, it's getting smaller, and the cells are starting to die off. And it's not supposed to be that way at age 40 or age 50.
Right.
You don't see that at those ages. That's how they know it's Alzheimer's instead of just someone getting old. Because as you get older. Yes.
This is in Alabama. I got a question. What happened? I got a friend of mine went to Johns Hopkins. We had a conversation last night, and he explained to me about Medicare, where if a senior goes to a particular hospital, they get penalized if they treat them past 30 days. Like if they have a hip replacement or a knee replacement, they get penalized. Also, there's only a certain amount of seniors they can treat per hospital. I think it's section 3000 of the bill. I'm sure you've read it. So, I mean, what can you explain that to me better?
I read that in the HR bill. I'm still going through the actual bill that's been passed. From what I've seen in the actual bill, that's not the case. Are you talking about the ACA and not just Medicare and
general? Yeah, it was 700. Also, he made a point about He said $700 billion taken out of Medicare, and he was just saying that it's going to be a lot of seniors that are going to suffer because a lot of dialysis places, because he says they pay 91 cents on a dollar now, and that's why health insurance premiums are going up on other patients, because they have to kind of raise it. And the insurance companies is based on an actuary table. And so now that it's going to probably drop down, it may drop down to 80% on the dollar. That's still, that cost is going to go to everybody that's paying on regular insurance. So I remember you saying the other day that that's what the bill's supposed to do. The bill is supposed to suck and basically ruin everything so we can go to single payer.
No,
so,
I didn't say that was what the bill was supposed to do.
No, that's what you said, Diva. You said that's what you think the right thing is, right?
No,
you
I didn't
think
say
that's
that was
the right thing,
thing either. I said because people got what they actually asked for, they're going to end up in the end complaining about it, and then there's going to end up something else.
Well, so you're saying that people wanted this?
Yeah, people didn't want a public option where only people who couldn't afford the insurance or people who wanted to be on the government insurance but didn't qualify for Medicaid could opt into this. That was what originally...
Okay, so, but I'm saying it's almost like saying, okay, well, I got a headache, and somebody say, well, hey, let me do brain surgery, see about the headache. You say, no, I want you to do brain surgery. Okay, well, let me cut your head off. It's
well,
kind of like that. It's kind of like, okay, it's like, well, how about you just give me an aspirin?
But that's
nobody,
exactly.
It's like that's just the only choice.
Well,
excuse
that's what
me.
Happened,
excuse me,
though.
One second. Can you guys tell me what we're talking about again?
Yeah, he switched the conversation over to the ACA.
Oh, that's a joke. You guys are no fun.
Well, hold on. He tried to do that on Tracy right at the beginning of the show. I thought that was kind of funny, though, Alabama.
No, I talked to this guy from my friend. We went to school together, and I hadn't seen him in years, and we talked in. I asked him about the bill, man, and he's a doctor. I mean, he makes a lot of money, but he was just telling me how screwed up it's going to be for a lot of people. And I just, you know, which I kind of felt that way, but he's just telling me how a lot of seniors are going
to
really suffer under this bill.
To answer your question about the $750 billion, that was taken out of Medicare Advantage, which is Medicare Part D.
Yeah, Medicare Advantage. He said it's $2,700 per person. That there's other parts of it too that they cut. They didn't just cut. But he's saying
no,
they cut 90 cents on a dollar, 91 cents on a dollar. He's saying that's going to go down.
So
$750 Medicare Advantage
was for is Social Security prescription coverage, which is not Medicare Advantage. He cut it from Medicare Part D, which covers your prescription a person's prescriptions who is on Social Security. And I don't know anyone who is on the lower income or middle income whose prescription coverage went up. I do recall my stepfather's and a couple of his friends are saying that they're copay.
In your opinion, Diva, do you think this is a good bill?
As written, no, it didn't go far enough.
So you think a single payer system would be good, right?
Oh, I thought a public option system along with I don't think anybody should be forced to take government assistance, so
can a public option system Diva
would have been better.
Green, can I take my show back?
Oh, sorry.
I don't know. You kicked me off the show earlier.
I didn't kick you off. I told you to slow up. You're trying to go somewhere we wasn't going. Because we were trying to get out information about the actual disease, not about the medical treatment of it inside of the legislation.
Okay.
Y'all still trying to go to Obamacare, and we didn't find out Obamacare don't care.
I had a real interesting conversation with a friend of mine from Johns Hopkins last night, and I was like, whoa, like he really just said a lot of different stuff. He's given names, journals. Different stuff. I mean, he knows this stuff like the back of his hand.
So
and
why,
he just cited
so
why,
t- why
the bill's
why
pretty bad.
Why didn't you give him my number and tell him to call in if I could have him on the show?
We'll do. I will do that. I will definitely
do that. Do that. Give him my number so we can have this conversation up and open on a day because today is Community Day.
What better day to talk about the community and then talk about a bill that's going to kill people, you're going to let people die. I mean,
Alabama. Listen.
I mean, look, I'm telling the truth, man. The single payer is going to be the same way. I'm just trying to understand how that's even. I don't understand why nobody thinks why a single payer won't be. Single payer is going to be pretty bad.
Alabama, come back to my show. My show is about Community Day. I've got Pastor McNeil talking about money.
All right, good. Let's talk about Alzheimer's.
No, it's for past Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's was last
time. Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be funny, because believe me, I know somebody whose grandmama has that, and it's not a good. It's not cool.
I know. So we're talking about we went from Alzheimer's to Alzheimer's Network. Now we're going to talk to – I didn't know you were an alpha. We're going to talk to Pastor McNeil about –
You didn't know that?
I'm from Alabama, too.
You from Alabama, too?
Mm-hmm. Camden, Alabama. 38 miles below Selma.
Where you from, Alabama?
I'm from Gumptown, Montgomery.
Oh.
You from the city.
Well, you say 38 miles below Selma. Well, because I played at Wallace.
Camden, Alabama.
Camden.
Oh, Camden. You're my homeboy from down there. We played ball together. He's from, his name Kane, Sherman Curry.
I went to Alabama State for 5 years.
Oh, what year were you there?
1965 through 69.
Cause,
and he was right there
with
him, wasn't he?
I wouldn't even run on in.
Hey, you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM. The number is 347-945-5229. I have Pastor Henry McNeil in studio with me, and they've been trying to put together this community credit union for a long time. They've got to raise $150,000, which is not a lot of money. I don't know why we think $150,000 is a lot of money. We are trillions of dollars in debt. We ought to be able to come up with $150,000.
I think so.
There's all the millionaires in Youngstown, Jeff, be talking about.
They're all, remember, they're all Democrats and they don't give money. I don't know why you would go there.
No, he knows plenty of millionaires who are
and
Republicans.
We do.
Okay, well, where are your Republican millionaire friends at? $150,000 should be nothing raised to them.
It isn't. They can write a check.
Yeah.
They'll be coming through soon.
The question is, when are we going to start contributing to our own? And see, that's the issue.
Here.
Oh, now you want to talk about you don't live here. You want to be from here, but you don't want to live here. And we've got to get out of this attitude where we're expecting other people to come and take care of us. You know, my mom always told me that people help those who help themselves.
That's correct.
Ooh, that's
but you got to start standing on your own 2 feet and acting like you're going to do something with the money that I give you before I give you some more, because to whom much is given, much is required. But if you can't sow into your own stuff, why should somebody come around and give you something?
Good point.
And it's time for us to start contributing into our own economic future in our own communities. You can't wait for the man to come and help you out of a ditch when you can get out and dig your own ditch. That's like Moses going through the desert, having 1 million people and not digging for water.
Okay, I have a question for this credit union. Okay, say
yeah.
I'm working minimum wage, I'm living in Youngstown. How does a credit union benefit me and my family?
You want me to answer that?
Yes, sir.
Well, credit union can benefit you in terms of many ways, as a matter of fact. Number one, the financial institution that you deal with called a bank, you have no say about the interest rates either going or coming. The amount that they charge you for the loan that you get from them, you don't control any of that. As a credit union member, you would control it. Secondly, the money that you invest, they pay now 0000, and you got to count for about a few minutes interest. If you put $20,000 in a bank this year and you keep it there all year long, you get less than a dollar of interest. That's crazy.
Ooh,
that is
bad.
Criminal. But yet it's legal. Now,
and don't forget all the fees. If you don't touch your money for 3 months, they're going to charge you a fee.
Right.
If you touch the money, they're going to charge you a fee.
Right.
If you walk across the street, they charge you a fee. If you back up, they charge you a fee. And the fees add up to their bottom line also.
And you don't control any of it.
Can I make a comment as to me what the best feature of a credit union is as compared to a commercial bank?
Please help me out, Alabama.
It's real simple.
That's
Alabama.
That's Brown.
That's Brown. All right, Brown.
It's real simple. Credit unions are not for profit.
That's right.
So your commercial bank you're always fighting them about fees and fee reversals and all the hard line they get because they make money off of you. A credit union is designed to serve the community. And you also can get better rates and probably better consideration as a member of a credit union when you're looking for a loan for a car.
Yeah, they're more lenient. Even credit unions are a lot more lenient when it comes to doing real estate. They're a lot more flexible.
Right, but the main reason is they're not for profit. They're not in it. They're not in business to make a profit.
So they're
matter of fact, they're not allowed to
trap people with overdraft fees.
You'll get an overdraft fee, but it's still not for profit. The way banks work now is they purposely do it.
They will. The way they set their accounts up is no matter how hard you try not to, they will do it anyway.
But they lie and call it overdraft protection. They really screw you with that, though. I tell them I don't want it. I'd rather get rejected.
But this is the issue. When you look at what we're talking about with the credit union, it is something that the community takes ownership of,
Amen.
Has control of, and you can actually it's a financial institution that has laws and bylaws and rules and regulations, and sometimes they can be a little bit more stricter than your conventional banking for the simple reason that they have community money in it.
Oh yeah, we're not going to do away with the money. You can't. You have to have lending standards and all of that. We're not. Just because you're a credit union, you don't do away with those standards. And you do have to have professionals. The state won't even approve your board of directors unless they have professional backgrounds and have a knowledge. The people that work in your particular credit union have to be certified by the state, in other words. The state have to inspect their background and all of that. So you're not just dealing with just a mom-and-pop operation there.
But what you have to do is you have to... But you got to buy in. The problem that we have right now is we have not learned how to be philanthropic to where we donate money into a long-term goal for our future and our young people.
Exactly.
Because the money that they're trying to raise right now, the $150,000 that they're trying to raise right now, it is a seed being sown into a future that's going to take a long harvest. And perpetuate every year. It's a perpetual harvest. Right. So your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren can yield from that with the seed that you've sown.
And it can be as large as the organization wants it to be, as aggressive as the organization is in terms of getting members. That's how large it can be. And our field of membership, by the way, extends beyond Youngstown. We've actually asked for a field of membership of all. Anybody can be a member who is in the United States of America that is affiliated with any church or any religion. Doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a Christian religion. Any church, they are eligible to join our credit union. However, we're not sure we'll be getting that much latitude, but we're pretty sure we will get statewide latitude to include members from all around the state.
Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, Tracy. I had a question for the pastor.
Yes.
I think one of the biggest concerns for people when it comes to just banking or using a federal credit union or whatever is access to their money. And because I'm sure people have deposited a check or cashed a check and then or even deposit even sometimes cash in the bank and then you can't even take it back out when you want to but you know then there's access to your money through ATMs and things like that when it comes to that with a credit union do you still have the same access to your money through, say, ATMs, because usually credit unions don't have ATMs all around the country. And when I'm traveling, am I going to get hit for, you know, $3 from the bank's ATM that I took, then another $3 from your credit union, and you know, just to access my money because, you know, I forgot to bring enough cash with me while I was traveling. I mean, how does that really work out?
Well, the beautiful thing about your question is that you're talking about a community organization, and all of the questions that you asked about accessibility and all of that will be controlled by committees and the operations of the board itself. The board of directors will control what goes on in the bank. That board of directors is chosen by the members of the credit union. as far as accessibility, as far as ATMs, let me just explain something to you. In our process of starting this credit union, we are now making arrangements to have what we call back office support. No credit union can start up doing the things that you're talking about by itself, but we are going to be in an alliance with existing institutions that have those capabilities, and we will be in conjunction with them, and you will have the same accessibility that you would have with a bank, because they will have ATMs and all of that kinds of things. So yes, you will have accessibility to your income.
There is a
to your
network.
Money.
There is a network throughout the country of credit unions, and if you are a part of the network, they collaborate so that you have access to your funds across the country. Not only that, with online banking the way that it is right now, the internet has opened up a great way for you to be able to be in exchange of transfer of funds a little bit easier than it was. You know, banks are just making money off that $3.
Right.
That $3 that access fee, they're just making money. And unless you buy into the Visa credit card center, they don't want it because they got to get a piece of it.
And the beautiful thing about it is, let's say once the credit union gets its charter and for some reason you use the ATM and they charge you $2 when you're in California and you don't like that. Well, at the next meeting, all you got to do is bring that issue up.
And vote it out.
And vote it out. Case closed. Now, you bring it up with PNC if you want to. I shouldn't have called on name, but bring it up with a regular bank if you want to.
Hey, South Carolina, your mic's open. Okay, 843. You know what? Hey, people just hang up on me. I'm going to take a break on that. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number's 347-945-5229. We'll be right back.
Is it just me, or was that a lot of words that didn't answer Alex's question?
No, it was me, too. I was like, oh, wait, okay.
Because, you know, I can understand with ATM fees, if I'm not correct on this, correct me, but with ATM fees, that the bank that has the ATM that you're using, they can charge, you know, whatever they want. It's up to you to decline or accept it. But what he was also asking is, a lot of times the bank that you deal with, or in this instance, the credit union, sometimes tends to put fees on if you're not using their facility. He didn't answer that question either, which was kind of strange to me.
It seems strange to me, too. My spidey sense went up.
Can you guys tell me what we're talking about again? Please, brief me.
We all over the place. You know that. It's getting where you fit in on Tracy and Friends.
I'm here and tickle you. You don't laugh at any of my jokes.
I always laugh at your jokes.
The Alzheimer's thing. I don't think that guy was being elusive or not answering the question. I mean, the even though a credit union is not for profit, it has to earn money. I deal with one, and I like it. There's never a line. It's closer than, you know, the commercial banks that I have to deal with or that I deal with. They allow me to cash checks far larger than what my balance is, and they'll give me cash right there.
Right. You know, I from what I understand about credit unions, I like them too. Okay, and that wasn't my.
Right.
I was all for talking about credit unions and getting it out there. It helps the community out. It does help to keep things on board. But I just found that answer that he gave extraordinarily dismissive. When you ask a particular question and you say, basically what he's saying is, if I go to an ATM that's not associated with the credit union, is the credit union going to charge me a fee because I'm not using their facilities?
Of course.
And he didn't answer the question.
Yeah, all I do is say, more than likely. Mine does. And I've done it before when I'm out playing cards or something.
Well,
I deal with a bank.
I deal with a bank that if I go to an ATM that's not of the bank, the particular bank I go to will charge me a fee, but the bank that I didn't use the facility from, my bank, will not charge me a fee. It's not a hard question to ask.
Yeah, they just hit you. They just hit you one way. You're right. I get what you're saying. I hate doing that, but no, I've had experiences where you get hit both ways in the casino.
Yeah, that's why I went to
a
bank.
You agree
to
a fat fee there, and then you get hit the fee in the other end. But you know, you're so in the matrix at that time that you don't care. You're just trying to.
Oh, absolutely.
Gamble.
Right, I want to gamble. Damn it! I'll pay $30.
I want to try to get my money back. Right.
But what if you happen to be in an area that does not have a credit union, and you, like you said, you didn't take enough money? What do you do then?
Those they're on the same. They're on the same star system and the other systems.
No, if you don't have a debit card either.
I got a debit card for my credit union. The only thing is they have a real old fashioned. They have a real old fashioned slow ATM machine. The one I use at Chase accepts cash. You know, does all kinds of things.
No, what I'm saying is, if you don't have a debit card, what if you don't? Because all I have is a savings account with my bank. Because I don't believe in since a bad experience, I don't bother with checking accounts. So all I have is a savings account. So if all you have is a savings account,
I don't think they issue debit cards.
Yeah, they
for
do.
Savings accounts.
They do.
No, they don't issue debit cards for savings account. They might issue a.
Hey, all right. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember getting one. All my accounts are checking accounts anyway.
So if you don't have a debit card, you don't have an ATM card, all you do is you normally make your transactions by going to the bank itself. You take a trip somewhere. You didn't expect the expenses, so you end up not taking enough. What do you do?
That you got to write a check somewhere or something. I mean,
you write a check on a savings.
Yeah, you know, in that circumstance, it's going to be hard to have access to your money. But you know, there's so many, there's so many ways around that. So I mean,
hey Mike,
yeah.
Is that you?
That's the only
yeah,
thing
is.
I have
I
a problem with. Is, like when I lived in Kentucky, I banked at Bank of America. There are no Bank of Americas here. So when I first got here, when I would travel here, and it was either use my debit card or I had no access to my money. And one time I lost my card, and I had no access to my money because there's no money.
You know what you do, Diva? You just take $100 and you go down to another bank and you open an account at a local branch.
Oh,
or you
yeah,
go to a Walmart, honey. You go to a Walmart or a place like that and just buy one of those prepaid debit cards when you travel. And just
I had one of those before too.
Yeah, I mean. But there are savings accounts where you can have a debit card on that account.
Yeah, I didn't know. I got so many dang debit cards from the checking account.
Yeah. But you know, here's the other part too, Diva. If you don't play their game, then you don't get to play the game. And why are you know, in this day and age, that's like saying, well, I want to go on a cross country trip, but I don't want to fly, don't want to take a train, don't want to take a bus,
right.
Don't want to drive. Well, then you can.
Well, no, my thing is, you want me to buy into your credit union, so I'm going to ask these questions, whether they're relevant or not. These are just the questions that I want to ask and I want answer to, so I can feel comfortable with buying into your product or your service.
Yeah, well,
right.
Yeah, that's and
a
well,
credit
system
union
would
is not for profit, and you're going to expect to get, you know, more personal service than you would at your
right.
commercial bank.
Right, but when I ask a direct question, I would like a direct answer is my
all
point.
All you have to do
that's
is tell you
yeah.
yes. Yeah,
that's
you're going
to
probably pay a fee
question.
As you would pay with any other bank.
Yeah.
That would be fine. I would
that's
be happy
the thing.
With that
you
answer.
Want to buy
I mean, that was the obvious answer.
But right, but
again,
he didn't, but that wasn't the answer given. That's my point. Is if it looks like a dodged answer, then I'm going to be apprehensive.
I mean, with all due respect, they're like politicians. You got to take everything they say with a grain of salt.
I was just thinking the word politician too. Oh, we're going to
go that far.
I can. Well, I take anything everybody says with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
So
why does
I mean, you know, so
the perfect system before people. I mean, it doesn't have to be perfect. Okay, there may be situations where the credit union is at a disadvantage, but me having come from real estate, credit unions are a lifesaver in a lot of ways that a lot of people that don't deal in those type doing, like when you want to get a car or credit
right.
union, by far the easiest one. They're a lot more lenient. You go in there with like a 5-something credit score, they still will talk to you, they'll work deals with you. Go to one of these big mega banks. It's a computer doing it. You're not talking to a person. It's a computer making a decision. You get rejected.
Right.
There's nothing that loan officer can do.
So I know a lot of people that get cars and they use their credit union. They get a better rate, and they get a lot of flexibility. And the credit union is interested in making money off of that. You know,
and then the thing I see is if you don't like it like that, then you have another account at another a bank or whatever, have a direct deposit set up there, and just use the credit union to borrow money.
Right.
No, that's you know, yeah, it makes perfect sense. There's a lot of options out there.
Credit Union was the only company that would work with me at first when I first got started. That's who I had to go through. So, I mean, now it's different. But back then, when I was first getting started, they were the only ones dimming some hard money companies. There are differences in benefits for hard money. Hard money doesn't look at credit, but, you know, they're going to charge you 14%, 15%.
They stick it to you good, though. I've done that
before. Yeah, they get you. But when I first started, that was the only two options I had. So
hey,
I don't see nothing wrong with it. It's just,
they
business.
Get you.
That's just part of business.
And you're happy that they got you.
Because they only got five babies out of me. Yeah, you got me.
Tell
but
you
at
out
the end
trouble
of the day,
where you can
turn
everything back around.
Yeah, you said you got a property in a high demand area and they charging 14%. You only made five payments. And then I didn't even make that because it was in the contingency. So you really don't even make that payment. So you really still came out if you got a good deal. But, you know, I mean, that's just part of the nature of the beast. My sister got upset because a guy did a simultaneous closing on a house she had one time because he put it under contract and sold it and made $5,000. She got upset. I was like, well, that's just the nature of the beast. And credit unions, there are benefits and there are disadvantages of just about all of them. That's just how it works.
A hard money loan, not only are you paying a high interest rate and maybe some back-end money, you know, they can hit you on the back end, but most of the time, just about all the time, you give up some points. You know, so if you're borrowing $30,000, you know, they might charge you 4 points to get the money.
But if you file bankruptcy, if your guy has a bankruptcy or a 400 credit score, and you want to get a deal that's $100,000 you can make or something, then it would probably be a good idea to do it. But if you're looking at it, if you got choices with money like a credit union or another bank, then you probably wouldn't look at it like that. So,
you know, I was lucky enough to take a hard money loan on a condo that I owned as the market was rising in 2002 and 2003, mm-hmm. when I was in between money-making ventures. And thank God I was able to do it, you know? And it hit me
hard.
Well,
California was special, man. My brother lived in California. There were people in foreclosure. And he would come to try to get them out of foreclosure, and they were like, "No, let me think about it." They got offers; they're walking out of foreclosure with $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 above. And it was crazy.
No, that's true.
California
that's happening
was
in Florida
crazy,
too.
Man.
Florida's
that
doing the
crazy.
Same thing.
If you got equity in the place, I mean,
I'm talking about including equity. People were paying more than what the house was worth just because they were going up that fast.
I can tell you, one of the things that they do is they use loans in order to generate interest payments.
People don't understand money makes money.
Yes.
Money makes money, and people, banks, credit unions, are in the business of selling money.
Oh, yes.
When you buy a car and you get a loan, when you buy a house and you get a loan, you are buying money from the bank.
And that's another aspect of this that people forget about. And once you become a credit union, then you are eligible for grants, and that's free money. When I say free money, you have to do what the grants say do, but we don't mind doing that either. But there have been several institutions who have committed to allow us to get grants or to apply for grants from them once we get a charter. So it puts you in a whole new category. We're also going to be teaching
patients or the government.
Government has grants, too, for particularly the kind of credit union we're trying to start, and that is a low-income credit union. It gives you opportunities to apply for grants that you normally wouldn't have because it's inner-city low-income. So, yes, government does give grants to those kinds of operations or credit unions, but most of all there are institutions that give grants to those. There are foundations.
You'd be surprised the money that will come in and help for education and help for outreach and help for – because you're looking at a socioeconomic group that they're trying to create so that they can accumulate wealth, let me put it that way.
We actually have actual paper agreement from Youngstown Housing that they're going to come in and do classes for us and at no charge to us.
Well, one of the funny things I find out about banks is that they'll give you a certain amount on a CD for, like, say, a year, and in the middle of that year, they may go out and make 30% a month on your money and then turn around and give you back, you know, 2% for the whole year, and you think you're doing something smart. You're not even keeping up with inflation. So these
right.
banks are like, what is it, Goldman Sachs?
Mm-hmm.
The guy told me they're like a great white in the ocean. And a lot of times they come and make market. They're a market maker. They do what they want to do. So, but you people go in and get these people, these lending and hedge fund institutions, their money, and they get a decent return. But a lot of times what people don't realize is that these people are making way more money than what they're paying you.
Oh, sure.
Business.
If you look at what we talk about when we talk about the currency and the difference between currency and money, there's a major difference. And until we start really understanding what currency is all about, currency is, and when you say that, you have currency running through your system and
mm-hmm.
through your community.
Mm-hmm.
And money is a tool to build currency and to build wealth.
Oh, yeah.
And we have not been indoctrinated in our minds, so we would rather spend $700 for a purse.
Oh.
And only have $7 in the purse,
mm-hmm.
instead of paying $7 for the purse and having $700 in the purse.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to learn how to change our mind and our children's mindset. We spend more money to wear somebody else's name on our behind than we do in the bank and have it for our own use.
And the banks are not teaching you anything on financial literacy.
They don't
and
want
that
you
kind
to know.
For an instance. The bank will never tell you the fact that last year $650 billion was lost because black folks didn't make a will. The bank will never tell you that. The fact that almost $1 trillion was lost because the underprivileged didn't have insurance. Assurance that they could afford. Now, I'm talking about insurance that you can afford. All of us at a young age, most of us anyway, I'm not going to include everybody, all of us, most of us rather, could have enough insurance to bury us if we were to go at it at a young age, if we were to get insurance at a young age. That's the kind of things our credit union will be teaching, financial literacy.
And just like I said about Alzheimer's, you need to have trust, you need to know about how they work.
Yes.
So that when things happen, you don't lose everything.
Right.
So you have a business and you no longer have the business and you've been working so hard, but your kids can't have it because you keep it so close to you.
Mm-hmm. So
and people are like that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What did you say, Brown?
My grandmother was 94 with money and refused to make a will.
Oh, my Lord.
Like she was going to live forever.
Right. Well, that's
even with a will, it's hard. Even with a will,
yes.
It's hard.
Absolutely.
But could you imagine how much harder it would be not making out a will?
It's well, almost,
She couldn't let go. Her money was, you know, was important to her.
Well,
and
it
that's
doesn't matter.
If your
my
money,
uncle, my uncle
if your money's important to you,
money anyway,
you ought to do,
so.
You ought to make sure that you put it where you want it to go, even if you don't do nothing but send it to give it to who you want to give it to. But you just don't let it go. Into the abyss.
Well, yeah, the problem is we misunderstand life. Job says, I came here with nothing, and I'm certain that when I leave, I'll have nothing. You know, billionaires die every year. But guess what? They don't take a dime with them. So you may as well provide for who you want to get that before you leave here. When you don't put it on a piece of paper, I can tell you what the end result will be is the lawyer's going to get it. It ain't going to be nobody you love. They're going to fight over it until all the proceeds go to the legal affairs. I see that happen time. I'm from Alabama, and it happens time and time and again down there because people are so superstitious.
If I can
say something kind of funny.
Yeah, go ahead, Brown, and then you, Matt.
John D. Rockefeller said they told John D. Rockefeller because he was supposed to be a pretty miserly, you know.
Right.
They said, you know, when you die, you can't take it with you. He said, if I can't take it with you, then I ain't going. That's the truth.
Well,
you didn't
get
that
up. That.
He said, if I can't take it with me, and you guys know John D. Rockefeller in Ohio. If I can't take it with me, I'm not going.
Is he still alive?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, John D. Rockefeller's been dead. He was the first billionaire in the U.S.
He's gone.
I just want to bring up one other point as far as wills go, and a lot of people don't realize this. I mean, if you made up a will 10 years ago, you have to keep on that will. You have to keep revising it, and I've been told, you know, every couple of years, because you have to keep up with the laws that keep constantly changing when it comes to your assets and what's going to happen when you die. My father, when he passed away, his will wasn't revised for 6 years, and we went through hell because a lot of those laws had changed, and we had to argue through the court system, not with each other, but as far as, you know, what was going on with his will and his assets, because that will was never revised. So just because you make a will 10, 15 years ago doesn't mean that you can't that you're good to go. You have to keep revising it.
Well, any will, though, is better than no will.
Yes, something is better than nothing. Because you have no idea how many houses in the especially inner cities lay waste because of probate.
Right.
And you know your kids gonna fight. They fight over peanut butter jelly sandwich. So you know you need to have a will.
Yeah, I don't talk to two of my siblings because of that.
Well, I mean, and we need to be mindful of that. And when you look at a credit union, when you look at commerce and building wealth,
yes,
you need to take a responsibility and say, you know what? We need to do something proactive and not be reactive. And this is a proactive move.
Right.
I think the pastor made a very good point about financial literacy.
Yes.
And a lot of times when people, I don't know how to put this nicely, when they don't come from people or there's generations of no one really having money or have accumulated anything, you don't have a clue about, you're not going to have a clue about any of this stuff because people don't take the time to tell you. And if someone were to take the time to tell you, sometimes it may seem like they're speaking Chinese.
Right.
But no, he's making a good point. It's important to educate and know about this stuff.
Yeah.
Mike, before you say that, how
can you have $1 trillion of money going through your community and not have anything to show for it?
Just because of illiteracy. We don't know how to preserve what we have. All of us have finances. No kind, you know, I mean, we have,
no matter where it comes from.
We all have some finances. And by the way, we all spend frivolously to some degree.
All of us.
Right.
Everyone.
We're a consumer-driven society.
Yes.
We're enticed to buy and have things.
Right. So there's I don't know of anybody that couldn't have bought a $10 a month insurance to bury themselves. I don't know of nobody like that. The people I know, when I was out there in the world, spent $30 and $40 on liquor a week, and some of them as much as $200 on liquor a week. And so, I was one of them, by the way.
That was priority.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, somebody educated me when I was 22 years old and I bought my first policy. Paid, $17.40 a month for 10 years, and I still got that policy. I haven't paid on it since 1982, I believe, the last time I paid a dime on it. Don't have to pay on it again. And when I die, which I know I will die, by the way, I'm not one of these people think I ain't going to never die. When I die, it will pay my beneficiary a simple $10,000. But that's enough to bury somebody. And I got a lot of other insurance. But what I'm talking about is financial literacy. And that's one of the things a credit union would teach. Financial literacy.
Because you will be a member. You'll be an owner. You'll have a part of this. You'll be a managing member of this organization in which you'll be able to do something with instead of just being a participant in something that you have no control over.
And the classes will be free for members. So we already got that in view. We already have that on our planning board. And that's one of the important things about having a credit union. You can afford to bring in people to teach financial literacy. And we will help people financially become a part of the banking institution from a credit union standpoint. In other words, the rules of engagement for one who goes into a bank is different from those that go into a credit union. And I mentioned it when we first went on. One of the biggest differences is that you have no control over bank. I can't tell Chase what they're going to do about anything. And in the community faith credit union that we are establishing, you will vote on all of the directors. You will vote on the policies that are being set. You will vote on everything because that's how they operate.
And that's how you're setting this credit union up.
Yes.
And once you have an education about it, you'll be able to do something about it. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. I'll be right back.
The women of...
Are we off the air right now?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I hate to tell the guy, I hate to burst his bubble, but he paid $17 a month for 10 years to have a $10,000 death benefit. Had he put that money into a mutual fund, his death benefit would have been close to $200,000. At 65 years old, he could have left someone in his family. That is one of the biggest rip-offs, death burial insurance like that, especially when they sell it to young people.
I don't care what happens to me after I die.
Yeah, but I'm talking about if you're going to lay out $17 a month.
That's the morbid thing in the world, and I know people think like that, but just go ahead and cook me and scatter my ashes wherever.
Yeah. Yeah, well, somebody's got to come up with the money to do that, and it's one way to do that. But I don't believe in those.
Not even my problem anymore.
Future benefit policies. Pardon?
I mean, you know, I just have a different, just a whole thought process. You know, you die, you're dead.
Do you
I don't care anymore.
Do you have
well,
kids?
There are guys I knew that became millionaires walking through the poorer sections of our town collecting their dollar a week life insurance from the little book they had under their arm of 1,000 or 1,500 families.
Yeah, the insurance companies are in bed with the banks or own their
yeah.
own.
Yeah,
by
they
each other, and that's what they do.
The people
right.
he's trying to help with his credit union, if he teaches them that kind of stuff, he becomes the quasi-agent of the same people that have been keeping the poor.
Right, but you thought, but he's his message is going out, like you said, to lower socioeconomic people.
Yeah.
That when they die or people die and there's no money to bury someone.
Yeah.
So you know, he's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
He's coming from a good place with good intentions, but you're right as far as the mathematics and insurance policies,
yeah.
particularly
yeah,
life.
Yeah, but what do you tell somebody who can't even get life insurance? The insurance companies won't deal with them because they have a pre-existing condition. So there should be some type of alternative. I mean, I ran into that myself, and I'm sitting here without life insurance, and I'm like,
well when did
here
you
I am.
To buy
I have.
It?
I was diagnosed with cancer. What do I do? Because they all denied me.
Yeah, yeah, but you waited until you had the cancer diagnosis to buy it.
No, I had. No, they wouldn't give it to me previously also because I have epilepsy. I was diagnosed with epilepsy. So.
Well, then what you do is you do exactly what I just said. You take your $20 a month that life insurance would have cost you or whatever, and you put it into an IRA, a Roth IRA in a mutual fund, and you will have more money than the insurance policy would have ever paid.
Provide if it's stock driven, provided that the stock market stays.
You know what, Beasley? I've clocked the stock market since 1924.
Right, but it's totally different, and I understand that.
I can take any 36 year, which is about the average working career for most people in their serious job. I can take any 36 years. You give me the starting date, and you tell me when you want me to lay it against, and I will show you that a simple mutual fund will outperform any investment guaranteed because our economy doesn't stay down. Everybody 5 years ago, oh, the market fell to 6,000. Yeah, look where it is today. All that money recovered. The only people who lost money were the ones who panicked and sold out at the bottom. The rich bought in at the bottom. And that's more of this education and this stuff. You got to go with the law of large numbers and statistics. That's why I'm all for private retirement. The heck with the Social Security. Now, I think the government should force people to put their 7% in, but I'm telling you, when I looked at my mother's own retirement numbers, her pension, her Social Security, when she came here in 1946 to this country and worked for 40 years and retired on $7,700 a year Social Security, she would have had four times that in income and would not have exhausted the principal, and in the 10 years when she collected it and then died, she would have left my brother and me over $600,000.
Patrick McNeil is here, and he is from the Community of Faith Credit Union. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is 53 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. I'm up against another top-of-the-hour break, but I wanted to get my little break in between. But I do want to thank him for coming in and hanging out with me and being with me for so long.
Amen.
And I believe in what they do. We've got to take ownership of our own economic development, guys.
Yes, it's important.
And he's going to make a plea. Folks, you know, sending, you know, I got to go back to my dollar a month. If everybody who hears this message sends a dollar a month, commits to $12 a year, a dollar a month, everybody, $10 a month, whatever your purse, whatever your pocket will stand, and say, listen, you have no idea what compounded money does.
Oh, yeah.
If I get 100 people to send me $12, I guess what? I got $120. Multiply that.
Mm-hmm.
But Tracy, I got a guy telling me on the TV that I need to send him for the foreign aid kids. I need to send him, you know, the price of a cup of coffee a day. And then there's another commercial that shows me that I need to send. How do you get past that? What's the mind frame? What's the catch of being able to say, well, this is important because it's community and it's what affects you right now?
Let me tell you the difference.
Discernment.
It's more than discernment. It's coming. Charity begins at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate us going out and being philanthropic and helping the little kids across the street. But if you don't deal with the economic situation in your own backyard,
right,
they're going to be in your house. And on this show, we talk a lot about entitlements and about, you know, the country being in debt and people being on welfare and all that kind of stuff. We talk about it, and we talk about it pretty bad. But if you don't sow seeds of knowledge into people so that they can become independently, economically solvent, then we will always have an entitlement mentality, and we will always be dealing with welfare children. But you need businesses inside the community that can go get a loan from the credit union, that can go hire the young man who just got out of prison.
Not only that, but the when you send money abroad, and I was watching a show just the other night on television where they told us that most of these institutions that receive money going abroad, 90% of it goes to administrative fees. So you're not really contributing to those hungry kids that you see on television. You're contributing to somebody who's a millionaire in some cases.
And they're paying them $1 million.
Yeah.
Tracy, there's a website called Charity Navigator. You can go there, and there's another one. And they rank all these charities, and they actually show what the CEOs get paid, what they pay for all those perks they get. And it is absolutely disgusting because it's you'll see charities that some of the big-name ones that you see on TV – 94 cents goes to fundraising, which means that's an outside company, and then 6 cents on a dollar goes to that starving kid. And you'd be better off if you packaged something and mailed it to somebody. You'd have
the
United Way. What's the percentage on the United Way? I know it's way up there.
Yes.
No, United Way is very, very low.
No, the United Way is a good one. The Salvation Army is a good one. St. Jude's is
a good
one. I mean, they list them, but none of them are free. $1.98 goes to the charity, but they're down around 20%, 10%, 15% of fundraising costs, so you're getting 80, 85 cents on the dollar doing the work, you know?
Exactly.
But some of them are just absolutely disgusting. But you can then choose your charitable giving based upon what you see there on that. And
if you want to look a good example, check out what happened in New York with 9/11 funds.
Yeah.
They're fighting about that money.
The good pastor that's exactly the point I was getting at, was the fact that when you start thinking about charity and you want to help out your community, your state, your nation as a whole, the best way to do it is to start at the local level and start worrying about your own community, because it tends to spread. If everybody thought like that, it spreads like wildfire, and the nation as a whole absolutely just does nothing but profit from it.
And let me just make this clear. I'm glad we came up with this because I never thought to address it from this aspect. 100% of what you would send to this particular P.O. box, to this particular credit union, proposed credit union, 100% is going as matching funds for our to get the $1.5 million that we've
we've said that we're going to be receiving a non-member deposit. Now, let me explain something to you. Not one dime of it can go to for anything else. I have a sheet in which all the names are listed on that people have given. In fact, I was at an affair about 2 months ago, and a lady came and she says, Pastor, I gave you guys $50 last month. Can I see my name? You said you could see your name. And I said, bam, that is right there. I had my iPad. I showed her name there. She said, oh, you guys are serious about that. I said, of course we're serious about it. I won't take people money. I could never do that, even though I know a lot of people do that. But we got to understand there is no administrative fees here. We've already collected money, and I want to thank the Youngstown community for doing that. For 3 years, I collected money from individuals once a month. Some gave $100, some gave $50 for that purpose. So we are using that as operating income. But the money that we're trying to get here is 100% going towards matching funds.
Hey, I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends.
Hello?
Still here.
Yeah. He sounds honest, but again, I guess they all do.
I have never known someone who could say a positive comment and a negative comment in the same sentence.
Well, I just said I guess they all do. I mean, you know, nobody invests or gives money to someone that they think's a crook.
That's true.
Right. And the guy with the scheme or the plan or whatever it is asking you for money, he never tells you, oh, you know, by the way, you're going to give me this money, and I ain't going to do nothing but steal it, right? Oh, you know. So people tell you what they want you to hear.
Well, $150,000
isn't
called truth
that's much
secret.
To raise.
Huh?
Got some po-ass Republicans out there in the Youngstown area, huh?
Well, Jeff said he knows a couple of millionaires. That's why in the beginning I asked, where's all these millionaires?
Millionaire dollars isn't a lot of money these days.
I mean, but if you got 10 millionaires and they could give up a couple grand here and there, and then you're raising the rest within a community. Well, I mean, trying to raise it within a community.
Right, they should be able to start a credit union, no problem.
You would think. Because that's what they're, I mean, all those Republicans with us in the surrounding communities, Wardman, Canfield, Poland, Austintown, you would think they'd be quick to jump on this because they're always talking about, doing it themselves. Government's not the answer, and we need to do it. You know, just this is something you would think they would all jump on. So I'm shocked that he's having to raise money within the actual community. Because those people just don't have it.
They have it. They just don't know how to spend it. And Beasley's right. It's the education of the lower socioeconomic people. Diva, I wish I lived near you because I could show you documents and stuff. I was living below the poverty level when I owned the buildings my welfare people lived in. I was living a better life than they were. You don't pay $20 a week in 1983 to rent to own just to have a colored TV set. But that's what they did because they didn't have the credit.
People make
pay that kind of money.
Rent to own is a huge ripoff.
Exactly.
Well, most,
you pay 300% on that thing.
Well, you got a good. Well, now that you have the earned income tax credit, there's no point or purpose in rent to own or anything because most people wait till they get that money.
And they didn't have checking accounts.
Still rent to own?
That's stupid.
When I was in Cincinnati on business for a year and I got an apartment and my guy, a friend of mine that I did business with, he had rent-to-own stuff and
yeah.
I think I got a leather couch and a love seat. I was paying $90 a month for that. That's crazy.
Oh my gosh, my
it's
mom taught us never.
But I got it. But, you know, the thing is he offered to do it and, you know, he offered to do it. And
right, and they and
all,
the
of, all of a sudden
a,
I said yes. We looked at it. I said yes, and it delivered that afternoon.
Right, and,
when I first moved to Columbus, I had nothing but an air mattress and a microwave and a dinette set that my sister gave me. And I lived like that for 3 months until I got my first paycheck and was able to slowly buy stuff.
Exactly. So why can't you teach that to other people? See, you've done it. You're valuable.
I don't live around there. I don't live there.
But
so,
people,
I mean,
people anywhere aren't trying to struggle like that, you know?
They're not
people
willing to do the delay
things now. People want
like you were.
I tell my one cousin, I said, it's not as hard as you think, because when you think of all the money you can save instead of giving it to rent-own, because rent-own, they can come and take it whenever you miss a payment. When you buy it outright, you don't have to worry about it. And then if you have the money, you don't have to worry about spending it. That money can go to something else.
Yeah, because I used to get the call as the landlord to let them in because my name was on the contract, you know, is where they lived, that I was the landlord, and that's how they rented these people. And I had the unfortunate, you know, because the people would, you know, disappear, would lock the door, not answer the door, whatever. And I had the lawful right to enter the apartment, and rent-to-own would ask them to come down and unlock the door for them so they could take the stuff out. And it was terrible.
I've heard it said that if you switch the money from generation, like take everybody that's broke and take everybody that's wealthy and switch it around, most of those people in 20 years will be right back where they were because they have bad spending habits. That's why you got title loans. I hate title loan places, but they in the hood because those people have bad spending habits. And that's
well,
just the way it is. And then you made a point about tax season. A person tax season, this is what they're going to do. They're going to spend a little of their money, just enough. They still going to go get the rent they own, but they're like, well, I got money now. I ain't going to take it all and buy this furniture. I'm going to just go get a little something from the store, and then I'm going to put the rest on rent they own because it's just a small payment every month. I can handle that. You're not going to take a $12,000 check and say, I'm going to go buy some furniture and have $1,000 left over. People ain't going to do that. They're going to keep that money.
Some people,
and
some
these payday
people
loans, too. I mean, they're over 500%.
Payday loans, that's the killer.
That's worse than the title loan.
Look, I was in a title loan when I had my first house, and I had ran out of money and needed some material. That was the biggest mistake I ever made. I paid on that loan 2 years because I ain't had no money. I was working on my first house. I was buying stuff. These people called me every month with an attitude like I owed them, and I had paid them $140 a month on $1,000 for 2 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And they called me up until the last payment. I had to still get them $1,000 and pay them the last month's payment when I sold that house finally.
You know, when I was talking about I got the hard money loan at the time, it's not because I had bad credits that I didn't have. I didn't take the time to establish really any credit. You do what you have to do at the time. Hopefully you would get yourself in a better position where you can make smarter decisions.
Hey, Alabama, your phone is starting to get all muffled again.
It just comes down to how badly you want an education because, people don't want to sleep on the floor. People want to be able to entertain. People come over and have a nice place to live. But I've done it. I've done it twice. Where I've moved somewhere in
heaven. I mean, I honestly don't even brag. If I have a child, I'm not going to bump education. Get some knowledge. Because education, you get a degree, get a job, and still be living paycheck to paycheck.
Exactly.
I don't even think. I'm not an education person anymore. You can get a training as far as I'm concerned.
I'm not either. I hear that.
I'm not the best person to speak because there's been times, even within the past 10 years, that I chose to live at the Travel Lodge, and I'm spending a fortune there at the Travel Lodge. But it was convenient. It's there. I figured that the cable television was...
SOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. It is our community day, and for those of you who do live in the Youngstown community, we want you to know you're still a part of Tracy and Friends, so you're a part of our community, too, and I appreciate you. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock, and I have Pastor McNeil in the studio with me. And we are just having a conversation about establishing a economic focal point in the Youngstown community and abroad. Because with the world as it is today, you're not just stuck in your isolation of Youngstown, but it actually is abroad. And while I was during the break, I was telling him that what we should do, what we need to do as a whole is either commit to a dollar a day, a dollar a month, or phone a friend and say, you know what? Hey, friend, listen, I need for you to make a commitment of $100 or $25 or $50 for, you know, a month, $5 a month.
Mm-hmm.
and that you're going to commit to writing a check, writing it out, and sending it to the Community of Faith Credit Union so that we can actually start sowing seeds of economic growth in our community.
Yes.
It's not that hard. Compounded money works. I can do more with my dollar and Pastor Macklin's dollar together than I can with his dollar being separate from mine. And we need to learn that.
I like that idea. It's an idea that needs to be put forth to the community, as a matter of fact.
But just reach one. You know, if I call him up right now and say, listen, I need $100, and I need it in 2 months or 3 months, and I commit, Tracy, I'll give you $25 a month for the next 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
For the credit union. And what we're going to do is we're going to try to put your name on the wall so people can come in and say, you gave.
Right.
You planted seeds into the economic future of the Mahoning Valley.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. It's not that hard. And if you know, if you got $1,000 to give, great. But if you only got a dollar to give, it's wonderful.
Yeah, that would be great.
But we need to learn how to do collective. And we need to do this more than just credit union, but do this in business, do this in our organizations so that we have money to give when people need it instead of always looking for somebody else outside the community to give to us.
That makes a lot of sense. But people do have to have trust when they give, and that's one of the things that we
I don't trust Jack Daniels.
Yeah, well.
Okay, and I'm serious. I love you. I love that little trust comment that you just made. Yeah, you got to trust me. But how many of us have given money to people who we thought we trusted and couldn't trust them? How many of us have bought things and only worn them? I am guilty of buying a pair of shoes, thinking I'm going to be cute in them,
mm-hmm.
only having them on 5 minutes, and there's $30 sitting in the closet, never to be used again.
Right.
Did I trust the shoes and not hurt my feet? Absolutely did not, because they hurt my feet when I tried them on.
Mm-hmm.
But they were so cute, I had to have them.
Tracy, I bought a vacuum cleaner a few years ago for $1,200 because the guy came in and he told me that it did remarkable things. And 6 months later, I realized I just paid $1,200 for something that sucks up dirt.
Was it a Kirby?
Yeah. It was indeed a Kirby.
Yeah, those are good. They almost got me, but I said a $1,200 vacuum cleaner, you got to be crazy.
Oh, man, he almost got me for two of them.
Yeah, Consumer Reports just compared the $200 shark that you can buy on TV against the $600 Dyson. Guess who won?
Well, you know what? Let me tell you a quick story, and it's really quick. I got the Kirby, and it's got the that automatic drive on it where it goes back and forth basically on its own.
Yeah.
And I made my wife very upset one day, and I fell asleep on the floor, and she was bouncing it off my head. I paid $1,200 for something that fucking hurt and hurt my head.
Well, how much vacuuming are you going to be doing when you need an actual vacuum cleaner that pulls itself? I mean, is it that heavy? It's not like we're pushing a lawnmower.
It's a heavy vacuum cleaner, Alabama.
I'm just saying, that don't even make sense to me. Like, look, I'm going to get me a $50 vacuum cleaner from Walmart. I'm good.
Listen, hold on, Alabama. Now you got to understand, sweetheart. If we're gonna have this, you can't have a cheap vacuum cleaner because all you do is buy another cheap vacuum cleaner 2 months later. You got to buy. Now you don't spend no $1,200 on one, but you can't go that cheap. Go to Walmart and buy one for $1.99.
Look here.
You can't.
If I'm just trying to get the dirt up, right? I ain't talking about the little skinny narrow one that don't even work. I'm talking about something a little bit better. First place I'm going to probably go is the thrift store. That's where I'm going to go first and get
one.
That's
why you ain't married.
Ain't nothing wrong with the thrift store. I want me a woman that's at the thrift store with me. This women out there understand that. We were just talking when you guys were off the phone about how messed up the spending habits of the average American is, and I was just about to make the point about how they say just about everybody in the country is in debt. Everybody is just mortgaged to the hilt. Everybody's living above their means. Everybody. So I think we need some more old-fashioned look. We just going to go fake it till we make it. We ain't going to have nothing. We going to sleep on the floor on the air mattress and we going to buy piece by piece till we fill up the house, bump financing, bump, you know, even with cars. Cars should be 4 years old or older. You shouldn't, as long as it start up and go. You ain't got no reason to be pulling no paper off no car, and then you pull out and you out $10,000-$20,000 off the car just because it pulled off the lot.
Alabama, you'd be proud of me. I bought my first bedroom, my first bed, the other day, and I bought it in an auction.
Was somebody still
That's it.
I'm serious.
That's
about
it. Look,
I'm sorry, about
I, look, a bed, I'm going to go to Walmart, get that little stand, and then I'm going to buy my matches at the little factory outlet place we got over there. I'm going to pull the plastic off. It's going to smell good. It's going to be clean. It's going to smell like pee. And it's going to be mine. And believe me, I know about a mattress that smell like pee. When we buy it, we have to flip it over because that's how we grew up now. We
well,
buy all the matches.
No.
Goodwill. So
oh, yeah. We buy, it didn't literally smell like pee when we bought it now. Let me. My mom ain't do that. But we would buy old mattresses with stains on them when I was a little kid. And she had just left my dad. We didn't have no money. And we would sleep on, it was all three of us sleeping on one bed. I mean, but it was probably my favorite, best times of my life. When all us, had, you know, when we was broke and ain't had nothing.
Right.
That was family, wasn't it?
It's all relative.
Yeah.
That was family. That was family.
Bologna sandwiches, Saturday morning cartoons. Yeah.
But you know what? It's amazing what people can sell you just by yanking your chain. And that's the point I was getting at, was there's a lot of people out there willing to sell you or tell you anything to get you to donate or to do, you know, spend your money in places where it doesn't need to be spent because it's just a line.
What happens is, especially amongst the people who don't have much power in our society, and I think I can speak on this with some authority, being a disabled person, you reach a point in your life where every other road you turn down, you get stopped, and one day someone knocks on your door and there is something you can take action on and feel like you're doing something and you're proactive in solving something in your own life, and that's when you get taken for the self-propelled $1,200 vacuum cleaner. It hits you in the head
what
before you bought it.
But Mike, you know what's funny, though? What I find funny about the whole situation is, like, sometimes, like, even with the housing bubble, if people didn't want, if we don't want more than we can afford as Americans, that wouldn't work. Derivatives, that stuff would not work. People felt like they wanted more than what they didn't care about. Well, it's going to mess up in five. I know y'all don't like this, but I believe that. I believe there has to be a market of fools to sign a paperwork. And if people had the attitude, you know what? I don't want a house. If it's under 200, I want it, but I can't do no $500,000 house.
Right.
I mean, people need to have that sort of self-discipline to say, I'm going to go without, I'm going to have a smaller gas-saving car, and I'd rather have a pocket full of money. I think this country would be better off.
But most
of those houses,
that goes
to our media. That goes to our media who's raised our children.
What'd you say, Mike?
That's not always true, because my mother always raised us to not incur debt, to not do the things that a lot of people are doing, because she's seen it. We lived in a hood. She's seen how people come the rent places, come and get people's furniture. So, she said, if you got the money, buy it. If you don't have the money, then don't. It comes down to personal responsibility. It comes down to people being responsible for themselves.
What you say, Diva?
Wait,
what did Diva say?
The Republican hour we're listening to here?
Personal responsibility,
Well,
Diva, don't hold them responsible for their own decisions, are you? You can't do that.
Yeah,
can't hold people responsible for their own decisions.
Because I believe in social safety net programs for people.
I don't believe that
you caused this on yourself.
Diva, go in the hood. I guarantee you're going to see a bunch of new cars. Everybody in the hood got new cars. You notice that?
No, they don't.
Everybody.
The only time I see new cars, people who have gotten their income tax.
That is the easiest. A car is the easiest thing.
It doesn't matter where they get it from.
All you got to do is have a job. We got car sales. You got a job, that's your credit. That's everywhere down here. You can get a car easy.
I see it, too.
Guys, listen, hold up.
Everybody's in BMW and Mercedes and Audis. And
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely out there.
Can't have good credit.
Yeah.
No, you got to have credit. But then, you know, we need to really understand that when we look at economics and we look at doing something, we need to do our best to think cooperatively.
Yes.
You know, and I say this, and this is something that, and I'm going to go, I'll take a, because, you know, Pastor McNeil is here, but I'm going to go take a rabbit trail for just a moment, and if you don't break me up, I'll shut up and play my game. Cooperatively, not only in just the credit union, but in our finances.
Mm-hmm.
Money is tight. We know this. Carpooling is a great idea that we don't do. We don't pool our resources together. It makes it makes sense for us to cooperate. And when we do, even when we do some bulk grocery shopping, and me and Sticks talk about going in together and buying a whole cow and putting him taking half and me taking the other half and putting it in the freezer.
We used to do that.
That's what I'm saying. It used to be done. We have not learned how to do that, to go out and buy stuff in bulk and then break it down and can it and jar it and bag it so that we can make our money go further, so our money can become a tool that works for us instead of us working so hard for it.
Right.
The same
what you think these
the
foreigners
country.
Do when they come over here and buy supplies that they sell us in the hood, have to, these Arabs, they all put their money together and buy in bulk, then they split it amongst themselves and sell it in the hood.
Didn't I just say, let me finish this? That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Excuse me, then.
That's what I'm saying. Even when it comes to business, it makes no sense for you to have the best mechanic in the world in your house. And he has to go to work for somebody else because we don't have the money behind us to put him in business for himself and then take care of the business because he's a mechanic. So he goes and works for Goodyear. They only pay him $20 an hour.
Tracy,
Uncle Sam takes half of that.
I don't know about that one, Tracy.
I don't buy that. If he's that darn good, money is available. This lie has got to stop that you need big money to start a business in America.
I started four businesses how many years ago?
One was 4 years ago. In this in this economy.
Tracy, if a guy can fix cars, folks will come beating his door down every. He gonna get sick of folks trying to get him to fix his car.
All he has to do is I'm telling you, there's so much federal money available for someone like that with grants, education, and everything else. But never mind that. You don't need a rich aunt.
Mike, I didn't say you need a lot of money. But what you do need is money to back you.
No, you
gotta have stuff. Mike,
you
got to have money, you have to have knowledge, but you got to have something. Because while you're building your business, you have to have something to pay your bills at
home.
It's
called your full-time job. You start it part-time. Nobody said you're supposed to make it on 40 hours a week.
Mike, this is not the conversation.
Let me tell you what he said to me. This will change it. This was a game changer for me. He said
Tracy,
he was worth
$80 million,
Tracy.
I don't care who I'm shouting at.
How did
you make
$80 million? Tracy, let me ask you a question. So if they open up this credit union, right, and a guy comes in and says, okay, here's my tax returns for the last 2 years. I have this business I've been doing part-time. I filed taxes on this business twice within the last 6 months because you're supposed to file quarterly or whatever if you want to. That why wouldn't that work? I don't see nothing wrong. You got the credit. You probably have to personally guarantee it.
That's right.
I think he's right. I think Mike is right. I think you can because I've started business part time.
Mike, sweetheart, listen to what I'm saying. Businesses do not make profit in the first 3 or 4 years.
He keeps his full time job.
Mike.
Doing it on the
Mike, listen to what I'm saying.
They don't make profit because they borrow $5 million from the bank, probably, Tracy.
No, that's not why. That's not what I'm. Listen to what I'm saying. I do this every day. It is very, very difficult. And if you don't have the family infrastructure in your house, don't tell me that you got to work another part-time job and you do it on the side and you got a family.
Well, why foreigners do it all the time?
Hold on,
foreigners come over here and do exactly what he just said?
Because they have an infrastructure.
No,
okay.
I had no infrastructure. I had to work.
I don't care how many
just to make enough money to buy a $200 truck so that I could go to work.
Mike.
I mean, I didn't drive. And then I had to hire a driver.
I am fighting with a blind man.
More than
you
are
incorrect in 2013 that you can just walk out today and start a business
when you're working 60.
I bet you.
Okay, Tracy, I will place a bet on this right now. If
what do you
want to
bet, Mike?
Who is in the circumstance you said, call me.
Mike.
I will personally mentor that person to millionaire status
in three years. Sweetheart.
Hey,
Mike, here
I am right here.
Here
I go.
Thank you.
You don't need money in this society.
Hey, I'll take it.
You know, we're witnessing. Diva goes Republican today, and Tracy goes communist.
That's not what I said, Mike. I didn't say nothing.
Pool your resources. That's communism.
Mike, Pulling your wheels is not communist.
Tracy, can I add something?
No, the average business is starting with $5,000.
You do know that, right?
Hold on, Tracy. Alabama, stop. I've got to get this done with Mike so we have this completely done. If you think that you're not going to go through the regulations and the loopholes and you're going to do this on your own, you are sadly mistaken in America today. That's the problem. I didn't say look to the government. I said look to your own resources.
You don't need resources. If he has the skill, that is a resource, and it's valuable, and it's worth money.
Mike, there are people going into business every day, and they're going out of business every day. It is what it is. Now, you can
start. Let me make a point. You can't start Walmart with out your pocket, probably not out your pocket, but you can start a lawn service. You can start small businesses like they used to do 100 years ago. Everybody started their business out of their pocket. Now we got to go to the bank, You don't have to go to the bank. You need to manage your money. I agree with Mike.
Mike, listen, Alabama, listen, guys, if you are a mechanic, I don't know if you guys have looked at how much it takes to get a hydraulic in your garage.
Why you need a start doing a mechanic?
I think what
you need hydraulic.
What Mike is saying is that you start where you are.
You start where you are with what you have.
Listen to what I'm saying.
Tracy, you don't know what it is to be a mechanic. They can rent a stall for $200 a day. They can go
A-frame. You can rent
an
A-frame and jack a motor out real quick.
Where are you guys renting this at? Where are you renting this at?
They're all over the country. All these parts that
you nations rent, they got all that stuff.
They rent you the stall with the lift and everything.
No, no, no. Who rents you a stall and all the equipment and tell me where?
United Rentals. United Rentals in Montgomery, Alabama. You can rent an A-frame less than $100.
Can I say this to you? Yeah, Matt.
Let me just interject this. There's one big thing that's missing here, and it depends on what you're talking about as far as what business you're dealing with. I have a guy across the street. He is extraordinarily knowledgeable when it comes to mechanics, and it deals with even today's mechanics when it comes to all the computers and the things. He has the ability, because of the work that he puts in and what he can do, to do it in a certain way to where he can get on top. Now, there are certain businesses that you might want to start that you're not going to be successful at unless you have some type of financial backing.
Right.
That's the difference. It depends on what niche you're in.
You got to have liability.
I only know the trade.
Hold on.
That's
Mike, I ain't talking about Mike. Listen, you've got to have a lot of things. There are a lot of people out there, a lot of great mechanics out there that do some great work, and they do some backyard work.
My cousin is a mechanic. Dropped out of school. Let me make a point. He dropped out of school. He's a mechanic. And I'm not lying to you. He's a millionaire. He started with a done A-frame in his backyard fixing it under a shade tree. And now he's got to do cars, houses. He's a millionaire. And I can get him on the phone if you think I'm lying.
Let me tell you what he did when he was young.
He went out, took some spray paint, and started painting curves. $5 worth of spray cans and was painting folks' address, you know, the little black thing with the number on it. He would sweep folks' curves off and paint them and charge them $5. And everybody wanted their curb painted.
60 Minutes did a piece on two people in Ohio in your backyard. They were both engineers. They got laid off 4 years ago. Do you know what they did, Tracy? They went for $20 and they each bought two of, for $10 each, pooper picker-uppers. And they have a huge business now with the Freedom Vans, and people just picking up dog poop off people's lawns.
I ain't talking about picking up dog poo.
But you can get started at any level.
Mike,
these people have enough money now, they can do any business.
That's what
Brown
was just saying.
That's not
a mechanic's
what I said.
A bad example.
That's
a mechanic's a bad example. That's all I'm going to say.
Tracy, what are you getting at?
Missing the point completely.
There is no point.
What are you getting at?
I said a mechanic.
I'm talking about a mechanic. A mechanic is no different than a plumber or a carpenter or any of the tradespeople.
Mike,
it's
you are not listening
to business.
It is not.
If you have the skill, you start getting customers, you do side work, you save your money, and eventually you're your own man or woman.
Mike, You are not listening to what I said.
I am listening, Tracy. You're not getting it. A mechanic
no,
is
Mike,
no different.
Mike,
if somebody with tools in
listen,
their hand and knowledge
you,
in their...
You are... Listen, you won't listen. You got
you
one mouth and you got two ears. What I'm saying to you is... I'm not talking about... I got
Tracy,
there's a lot
you're
of...
You're sitting there making a case for
you,
something...
Listen, there are a lot of backyard mechanics in the world today. Those backyard mechanics make a sustainable living for themselves. When they don't work, they don't eat. They don't have the type of opportunity that even if they're working a side job, it will not pay them or sustain them. It will not take care of more than what they have. And so I'm talking about not a business, but a business. It makes a difference. And with the regulations that go on in the state today when it comes to actually having a mechanic shop and the competitiveness and the computerized businesses and what you need, it is very, very difficult for you to do it in your backyard. Now, there are a lot of guys that are doing it. Don't get me wrong. But they would do better if they could cooperate with one another to make it happen. So you have more than just one. So that you have a tire shop.
Working together.
And working together. Don't tell me that that you can just do that and then work a side job. No, it doesn't work that way. That's what's wrong. So when I drop dead, it doesn't continue. And it's not continuing. We see that happening. It doesn't work. Yeah, you make a living for your family immediately, but not
long
yet.
They're a good mechanic, but they need a mentor to teach them how to build it into a business.
Mike, I'm not fighting one at a time. I'm not fighting with you. I'm done. But this I know.
But
you
Tracy,
don't know.
Can I add
You're
something?
Not a mechanic.
I don't have a mechanic listening
who would like to have his own business.
The guy who works on my car is a backyard mechanic. He needs the mentorship, yes, but he needs the funding to get the garage if you don't have a garage in your own backyard.
I was a backyard mechanic. A guy hired me to work on his bus fleet during the Vietnam War. These were the buses that brought the kids from the induction centers. I made enough money there. He didn't care. He allowed me to start taking on side jobs and use his garages on weekends. I built that into my first construction company because, you know, I got tired of just being a mechanic, and I built that into my first construction company. Doing a couple $1 million a year in business. You can start. You're a flower. You bloom or you're planted.
Well, Tracy, also, why is it that nobody got loans? The people weren't getting loans back in the day. Now everything we need the bank to do something. That's what they want you. That's what these banks came into the Federal
Alabama,
Reserve.
Alabama, I didn't say a loan.
Tracy,
I didn't say a loan.
To you, Tracy. You mean
I didn't
you.
Say
I
a loan.
To you. Can
listen,
you listen?
Listen, I didn't say a loan. That's not what I said. I said cooperative economics, where you pool your resources together. That's what I said. I never said a bank loan. I don't know where the heck y'all got a bank, a loan, and or a grant from. Out of my mouth.
I'm not even going there.
What? It's hard to get other people. It's hard to get other people to see your vision when you have a business idea like that. And I found that once you put your feet on the ground and you dig in and you make something happen, people would probably be more apt to want to invest and participate with you.
Right.
Talk to me.
That time of the game, by the time you're at that thing where you're up and running and you've got something going and earning money, you don't really want those people to participate at that point.
Talk to me, Brian. That's it.
That's true.
No, because they weren't there in the beginning. And I think
that's
it's
true.
At least for me, I would rather spend my efforts instead of trying to convince people to give me some money, you know, or to invest with some money, is just to go ahead and make the thing work.
Exactly. And
Amen.
Go ahead and convince them to at least try you instead of give you money
to bring
you business.
I own it completely. Maybe I have a partner. Maybe I don't. But I own it completely. I just think that's far more practical. And I appreciate what Mike's saying, that you start where you are. And you can be.
I agree.
You're not going to open
don't
a call or have a.
Listen,
business card.
And you're in control, and you earn enough money to pay your bills, which is a good thing.
I am an entrepreneur, so you're not preaching to the choir. But what I'm telling you is what I know for a fact because I live it. When I don't work, we don't eat.
I know
it's
about
just
that. That's
simple.
The way that's the way my life has always been.
And what
everybody's
I'm saying
life
to
is if you don't work, you don't
Mike,
eat.
Mike, let me finish what I'm saying. Things happen. And we
that's
need
true.
To learn how to work in cooperation with one another.
And
to make
so
the
yeah.
load No,
thank
listen.
You.
To make the load lighter.
That
makes
time.
Smart. It's a smart way of working. You ask about
Tracy.
The people that live in the Middle East. You ask about Arabs that come here. The reason why they do that is because they understand cooperative economics.
That they do.
But they don't
the
give each other money.
True.
One says
no,
I'm a mechanic, his brother
no.
says, great, I'll give you my business.
To get your own
Mike,
brothers and sisters family
Mike, I didn't say give you anything.
Damn.
This is not a gift. And
no,
this
Tracy,
is not,
the guy
that
fixes
alone.
Your
everybody
cars, Tracy,
free
the,
business
Tracy.
Cards printed and passing them out.
The Tracy,
oh,
the
Mike,
guy that
you're
fixes
not
your cars,
you're
all he has to do, listen, the guy that fixes your car, all he has to do is file his tax returns, live on 90% of what he makes, come in with a decent down payment to this credit union with the guy that's sitting right next to you, and he may actually get his loan.
You're talking about a grease monkey. They're usually not
basically,
that.
He's living on every penny, and he's living hand to fist. That's what it sounds. He's not managing his money right.
But listen to what I'm saying. Guys, listen to what I'm saying. I'm not saying about the guy who does my car. I'm talking about not grease monkeys. I'm talking about what happens inside of I am a mechanic. I am a baker. I am not a business person. I may have money saved up. But by the time I get the money saved up, I'm talking about making it to where the load is lighter. It's talked about the credit union. There are people that can go out there and write a check for the credit union, and it can just go and start flourishing tomorrow.
I understand what you're saying.
But what I'm
saying
is because we don't have cooperative economics and we don't show that we can work together, they look at you and say, why would I underwrite you? That's what I'm talking about.
Tracy, you just going to ride this point home. I ain't going to argue with you, but I disagree.
Don't.
Everybody has.
Tracy, it's a business between self-employed and business owners, too, and investors. It's just a big difference. There is.
And there is a difference, but what I'm saying is it's easier when you have multiple people working with you to make the load lighter. And what we're doing is we're working, and then we don't have enough for perpetuity in our own community. That's why Smucker's is 150 years old and Smacker's is only 50 days old.
And the thing, the fact of the matter is we do have the resources. They are here. But we need to work together.
A whole life, and you still struggling. You've been working in that business full time, and all you can do is...
I can't hear you. I can't hear you, Alabama. You're muted.
If you're working in a business full
time, and all you can do is must living, then you're probably doing something wrong. And you do need some mentorship. You need to manage your money. And the thing is, mechanics don't make $30,000. If you do, you suck. A mechanic gets $700-$800 for a day's work sometimes. So I'm sorry. I struggle to see he has something.
Do they
he
do
got
that?
Cars, houses,
oh,
women,
yeah,
girlfriend. He's doing something. He ain't got no business.
I got a good friend of mine. He owns an appliance repair business. He's making $600-$800 a day. And that's only till 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and he doesn't start till 9:30 or 10.
Yeah,
it took him a while.
I can understand that.
While to get there, but
it really didn't. He learned the business, and he went out there and decided that he was going to take the initiative to find his customers, talk the good game, and not only talk the good game, but back up that talk. And he did it rather quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like you're saying you're going to be a doctor, but you're not going to study medicine. If you're going to own a business, you have to study money management. Money management is the key to wealth. If you don't manage your money, you can make every penny and be broke. So that's why you're saying they don't have it. If these people got viable business and you're still saying, Tracy, that they're not going to make it, then they're not managing their money.
That's not what I said.
I think I may have missed the point. Tracy, honestly, please – uninterrupted, everybody. Please tell me where you're getting at here.
When you look at the Asian and the Arab community, when it comes to their cooperative economics, how they do things, it doesn't make sense for us to reinvent the wheel. when you look at becoming a mechanic or going into a bakery or doing on something, it's very difficult for you to go in business single-handedly on your own, even if you're a grease monkey. Because one thing you know is you may know grease, but you don't know money. I said that in the beginning. But you need people to come in and help you underwrite and be a part of the resources of you. If it's nothing much but your business cards and how they're laid out.
Yeah, but
well, you can pay people to do that, Tracy.
You can't pay. No. See, a business consultant you don't pay, because what happens is I'll take you. We got a lot of people here consulting on business, but they don't know business to consult on.
Well, then you have to educate yourself to know how to identify a good one. That's on
you.
But you're looking at models, because Arabs tend to pull together family.
That's what I'm saying. And they do it resourcefully. They do it very, very well. Jews do it very, very well.
And then the Koreans, when I went to go get my toes done, they had a guy there, and I'm like, why are you doing my toes? Like, how did you get into this? Well, that shop owner paid for him to come to America, and he's working that off in the shop. He told me that's how it happens a lot. If it's not their family, then that's how that works. So it's not somebody just getting people together.
They ain't giving nothing.
It's not just getting people together and say, hey, you know, I got this, you got that. I mean, if I got the resources and you got the brains and the creativity, yeah, we can pull together and work together. That's how Mark Zuckerberg and his one friend did it. That's how they launched Facebook. But sometimes in certain instances, you just got to do you and not worry about focusing on whether you got somebody that's going to help you or not.
Listen, you got to jump in, and you may never get the help. But what I'm saying is, as a business owner, it helps when you have other people to help you with the lifting.
Yeah, it do.
And we need to learn cooperatively how we do it, whether it be by resources or whether it be financial resources or human resources. That's
okay,
something that we do not do.
And I get your point, Tracy. I think, common sense is easier, two pairs are better than one. Nobody disagrees with that. I think you kind of lost me when you said a mechanic, because I got a cousin that really did it just like that. Just like
what I'm saying is, and there are a lot of people that are doing it, but in today's market, if you've seen the 2014 cars, if you think you're going to go find a grease monkey in a backyard and fix that car in 5 years, you're sadly mistaken.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
Whatever you're doing in your backyard, you're not going to be doing in your backyard and for $20 with some business cards tomorrow, because it's not going to happen.
That's not true.
She ain't going to hear that, though.
You can't even see. You ain't
Tracy,
seen these cars.
I did exactly that.
Mike, when's the last time you worked on a 2014 car?
I haven't worked on a 2014 car because now I'm in a position where I buy new cars and the dealers just take care of them, and when it won't run, they give me a loaner. Okay?
Hey,
I put myself in that position.
There you go. There's my case in point. What I'm saying is...
Hey, Tracy, how about
Mike,
this? SBA.gov. There's classes you can take online for free, videos, workbooks, everything that teach accounting, teach everything you want to know to be in any business you want to be in. Smallbusinessadministration.gov.
Okay. There's score, there's tons. But we're not,
That's
I'm
right.
talking about
so Alabama.
Mike,
mentoring.
You're not going to win on this one.
Yes, I am, because I'm going to say something that I didn't want to say, but I say it. We already know the problem is the black community doesn't support the black community.
May not work for Tracy.
That right now.
You guys are just different.
If the black
Both
mechanic
of you
who wants to start out
trying
to get black customers,
you.
Let him go find white customers.
Listen,
he's got to start with who will do business with him.
But, Mike,
that's
what I'm saying. We have the black community is changing.
Good.
And I can't use the
Arab community and the Jewish community as the example, because it's
not
the same parallel.
Why not?
Because, like Diva said, they stick together. They help each other.
Mike, talk what you know, because I can say this unequivocally. When it comes to what I do here at Tracy and Friends, I have a diverse group of people that support me in what I do.
Correct.
Black people may not have worked together in the past, and I can't speak about all of them.
Right.
But I can say this unequivocally. I got white folks, black folks, Arab folks, and everybody else helping me make this happen every day.
So why can't that mechanic do the same?
Mike,
doing what you did, networking.
Because you're not listening to what I said.
I am
because
listening. I just
talked.
Heard. I repeated
no,
it back to you.
Mike,
Tracy,
you did not hear what I
up on this stuff.
Mike, you did not hear what I said. You never heard what I said. You listened, but you never heard what I said. And when I talk about business, I'm not talking about a backyard mechanic. I'm talking about someplace where I can go and they're going to drive me to work at the end of the day and then come back and pick me up, and they're going to be insured if my car catches on fire in the middle of the night.
Tracy, what specific roadblocks is that backyard mechanic going to run into to starting his own garage? Like,
barring
give me some concrete
regulation. You got to go.
Okay, but
Hold on. Stop. Pastor McNeil, go ahead and tell everybody where to send their check so we can fight about this later on.
Yeah, this community effort that we are putting together, we need your help. We need your support. If you would send whatever you can to P.O. Box 1026, Youngstown, Ohio, 44501. P.O. Box 1026, Youngstown, Ohio, 44501. And make the check out to COFCU. And that stands for the Proposed Community of Faith Credit Union. We want to let you know up front that it is not, your check will not be taxed, the money will not be tax deductible. And this would be a contribution for startup capital for the Community of Faith Credit Union. Thank you very much.
And, Pastor, really quick, where could we go on the Internet, perhaps, to get more information about it in case we're still confused?
On the Internet, you can go to, let's see, here it is, down here. I should have been ready for that question. But there, give G-I-V-E 2, the number 2, COFCU.com or .org, either one. And you can get all the information you would need.
Online. Get what's the website again? www.give2?
G-I-V-E.
The number two, COFCU.com. You got that?
Got it?
Thank you, Pastor. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And I'm just talking about cooperatively working together as a unit. When you look at mechanics, you got to have insurances. You got to have some things around. And people don't, backyard mechanic, yeah, you go to them, but when you need stretch, you still go to Midas because he can't afford the different types of, you got to go pick up the parts yourself. I don't want to do all that. You got
to
have a credit line.
You don't want to be a mechanic, and you don't want to start your own business because if that's
Mike,
really
I'm talking about me.
And be your own boss, then you do that. You pay the price. Tracy, look the price you paid to be in radio. Most people wouldn't have paid it because they don't want to be in radio as bad as you. It's not a burning desire with them. What's your burning
it's
desire?
It's not a burning desire with me
solution.
Either. But, yes, but when I'm saying, when I talk about resources, it's more than just you. I'm not looking for people don't want to go to a backyard mechanic. They want to have a certified garage. They want to feel as though their car is being left in a secure area.
Tracy,
that makes
you know why they
difference.
Hired a blind carpenter? Because they wanted the discount
no.
I offered. That's why they hired
no,
to
money,
get a better
money
price.
Does not
they
always,
were willing to
money,
take a chance.
Money's not willing, always willing to do
I
that.
I don't use backyard mechanics because I do like the certification. I want my work insured. And I want to – some things, it's just a trust factor.
Right.
So I prefer the convenience of going to a garage. But the backyard mechanics do have them good prices, though. But I'll
you
know,
and
not,
you
know
what? You have a 15-year-old car, and you got to get to work. And
what did you say?
You're
Matt,
have. You're going to go and try to get out cheap, and you're going to go to a backyard mechanic.
Diva
no,
has
but
a good
we're
point.
Not talking about
Diva,
cheap.
Hold on, Diva has a good point, and there are. It's the whole certification that a lot of people look for. However, there's a lot of things that are certified. I can't tell you how many, certain muffler shops I've gone to that are certified, or certain other shops that are certified that always seem to find something wrong on the car. As a mechanic, I know those things aren't wrong with the car that they all of a sudden find. So,
yeah.
Honestly, a backyard mechanic that I know who can build himself locally in the community that is trusted is a lot more trusted than your certified national brand.
But it makes a difference. And when I say this, I'm talking about even the restaurant business. There are businesses, there are just things. And yeah, you can start a business overnight. And yeah, you can do the Martha Stewart as long as you roll under the radar.
But if you're really going to try to make a living at this and do it long term, it's bigger than just – because the regulations today just don't allow you to do things the way you used to.
But what's so wrong with being –
And you can't even just braid hair.
What's so wrong with being your own boss, having complete control, and going under the radar, as you say?
But
what's
again,
so wrong
let
with
me
that?
Say this way. Because when you're Brown, Diva made a good point. There's a young lady who does my hair, and she's not allowed to do my hair because she doesn't have everything she needs to do the hair. So she's got to be careful if I refer her to somebody because she's not supposed to do the hair, because we've made it to where if you don't pay the piper, you can't do hair.
Yep.
Wow, there's so many.
Your business like that.
How many really good hairdressers there are that work from their home that don't have cosmetology paperwork?
A lot of them.
Or maybe they had it.
And do you know how many of them have gotten fined in the last couple of years for doing it?
Fine, shut down.
Have you
heard
of
them? And ain't nothing wrong
with. You
can't make $100,000. You can't make $100,000 to $1 million in your basement, in your house. You're going to try, you got to keep your customer base. It's not going to be,
Diva, now, wait a second. Now, hold on. Now, that's not true. You can make that kind of money. The problem, what Tracy is alluding to, and I think we all have to make sure we're paying attention, because it's not just affecting the people that are not, quote-unquote, licensed or certified, but then this also affects the people that are certified. Your government regulations are changing how everybody plays the game. Whether you want to call yourself the professional man or the street man, it doesn't matter who you are. The government regulations are changing. Here, I'll give you the one quick example. What do we know about the guy that sells weed? Well, the guy that sells weed, we know he's doing it out of his house, because now where the government is legalizing not only the use of weed but even the sale of weed, that's going to change how the guy on the street corner does his business. That's also going to change how the pharmaceutical reps do their business with people like Walgreens and CVS and Rite Aid. It's going to change everything. So everybody gets affected by government regulations, not just
the
person.
And that's all I'm saying.
That's
what
she's saying.
You
know what
I'm saying?
If you're trying to start something and you're looking for ways to make it harder, if you keep looking, you're going to find some ways to make it harder.
But that's not what I'm saying. Listen to what I'm saying. Brown, I agree with you. You can always excuse your way out of something. I agree with that. But what I'm saying is...
Go ahead.
What I'm saying is...
That's part of business is on you, Mike.
I've quit in 2014 and started a business
based on my relationship with that one client.
But what I'm saying, listen to what I'm saying, guys. That which used to cost you a handshake.
Yeah.
We have, that you used to be able to go and open up a secondhand store, and the fire marshal not come in. Hold on. And the fire marshal not come in and check your, and you found a place that gave you some rent that you could afford. But now the fire marshal shows up and says, you can't do that because of the competitiveness of what the market is bearing right now. So when you go in there, you got to go in there a whole lot more correct than we did 10 years ago. That's what I'm saying.
Let me get this straight then. Let me try to put this in perspective. You're saying that whether you're a backyard mechanic or, say, a landscaper or something to that effect, you really cannot have an effective – and I'm kind of making this up as I go, an effective real effect on the market and build a business unless you're able to...
Not saying that at all, sir.
Hold on, Rick. I want to hear the rest of the question. Hold on, Rick. What did you say, Mike?
I already know what he's saying. I know, but I don't.
I want to hear what he's going to say. Go ahead and finish your question, Matt.
Yeah, I'm just asking a question. I'm not making a statement.
Right.
And there goes my ADD. Hold on.
I know.
So,
can I finish it for you? So I understand what you're saying.
I need to finish the question. Not assume that we know it. Go ahead.
I'm already off because he got me off. So let me see what he has to say. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Rick.
What you're saying. You're saying that the guy that's coming here out of his basement can't build a strong, reliable clientele and turn it into a profitable business. Is that what you're saying? That's your question? Is that your question?
No.
No, but unless...
What she's saying.
Unless,
what she's saying is he's limited. Because the way the things are nowadays, before you could cut hair out of your base without a license, you can grow it, you can have all types of people coming in and out. Nowadays, you can't have too many people in your basement if you even license to have that business there because of the health code violations. And if you ain't got no license, you can only work so long before you come or somebody come across the wrong person in the health department coming to shut you down.
That might be five, and that might be 5 years from now.
I think
Diva
just hit it.
No,
that's now.
I think
Diva
just
hit it.
I think
that's
now. So when
I you earn money, you become legitimate.
Mike, it's not. Listen, you are maybe from a bigger city than we are, but when you start cutting into my business, I'm gonna cut you out.
Yep,
it can happen.
And I'm gonna turn you in because I know that you're working in the backyard or in your basement. And
but who
my
are you, Tracy?
Because
lie
I'm
who
right
are
you?
Who
that's
are you? When you say
exactly
I'm going to come in and when you say I'm going to come in and do that, who are you?
I am your competitor.
Let me tell you who you are. You're a person going to keep competing business. That's what you're saying. And
that's what I'm saying. When I cut into your market share and I start taking your money away, whether it be Goodyear, whether it be stick and nail,
whatever it is.
When you find out that I'm doing business and I'm not doing it the way that you want me to, I'll do whatever it takes to get you out of business because you're stealing in my market share because this is about money and power.
So you're saying
and if you don't
Walmart,
have resources
saying,
and people to back you up,
in the
you
game,
lose.
The,
you're
the
saying
startup
Walmart
guy,
versus, hold
startup
on, hold
guy
on.
Has
Brown,
himself a
Brown.
Viable business, and it's
Brown,
time for him
seconds.
To take steps to,
give me
to,
2 seconds.
To come within
two seconds.
The regulations.
Give me
go
two
ahead,
seconds.
Matt. Go ahead, Matt.
Tracy, you're saying Walmart versus mom and pop hardware store.
Can I say this to you? I have a story here. And I'm going. Hold it. I've got a grocer here that's been. They've been in business. I want to say at least 50 years. And the unions, the corporations have come up and they have seeded the union. To make sure that they begin to, they've had at least up to 40 businesses, independent grocery stores in the area in the Mahoning Valley, and the big stores have gotten with the unions to make sure that he actually stunts his growth because they don't want competition from him. So
that's
he
a
is a community.
That's a different
no,
argument
no, Mike,
from a guy who's
Mike,
trying to start something.
Mike, let
so
me finish. Mike, Mike, I'm listen, Mike, you're going to let me finish this, or I'm going to mute you for the first time.
Yeah,
what is happening?
Muted.
I'm telling you that what is happening is if the market has become so viciously competitive, even with the startup, they don't want any outside competition coming in. And if you don't have the necessary means for your business, as long as you're making, $20, they don't care. But when you start making $700 to $800 a month and you start taking money and bread from them, then you're going to start getting visitors that you don't want.
Yep.
How many medicine shops do we have on the corner that were mom-and-pop shops, but now because Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, where are those mom-and-pop medicine shops at?
You don't have any more.
Thank you.
You
That's
can,
my point, man.
You don't have any more. And it was a regular small mom and pop, and they will lose all the money that they own to make sure that you don't gain a dollar that puts you out of business because they do not want you to be a competitor.
Hey Tracy, I just want to throw this out. For some reason, I feel like Rick is yelling at me for something when I'm asking. I'm just literally asking a question because I'm not really sure where this is going. That's all.
But your question, I understand your question. My concern for your thinking, because you said you don't know where this is going, my concern for your thinking is not that I'm challenging you. I'm telling you that the market does not have room. It does not have room for that guy that's trying to start his business and not just have a business, but have a profitable business. So I'm not saying that you can't have a business.
I'm asking you, are you profiting or are you just making it? Are you just paying your bills or are you able to say, I got enough to go ahead and take a vacation for 5 days from my business? Because now you're self-employed, mind you.
Do you want to know something? Even if you are just making it, you are independent and you are making it. And another something I want to add, once you have a relationship with your customer, okay?
No.
And your customer likes
you
and wants to do business with you, that is not going to stop.
For 10 days.
Hey,
listen,
you've got a good relationship.
You can take a – listen, guys. Listen, Brown, you can take a – you can take a vacation from your business, but you won't make any money while you're gone. And if you cannot take
a
vacation for 5 days.
I wish I had something built up where I could – it would make money when I'm gone. It just doesn't work that way.
And that's – and what I'm saying, it goes back to my original comment about having the infrastructure to build. I got to go. I'm done for the day.
Exactly. Understand what both of you were saying.
You
guys are just different. That's what you guys don't understand about each other.
Brown. No. Yeah, hey, Brown, I agree with you.
I agree with him, too.
They pay you next to nothing.
You guys just
you
both have a different perspective
that's because they pay
on how to go about things.
Hold on. Mike, go ahead, and then Brown, chime
go
in.
Ahead. In a regular full-time job, yeah, you can take 2 weeks off and get paid, but that's because they paid you nothing the whole rest of the year. The statistics, and again, I can only go with the facts, according to the Bureau of Labor, people who are self-employed doing the same kind of work that the people who are doing it for an employer earn double the money annually.
Oh, gosh. Way more than that.
I'm going by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. If you're a mechanic working for someone, you're making half of what you'd make if you were on your own.
I know. I used to work at 10% commission,
yeah.
Okay? I used to work at 10% commission where the markup on the product is about 35 to 40%. Okay?
Yeah.
So now I get all of that.
Exactly.
Now I get all of that. And I've got the flexibility of being independent. That's important to me.
Listen to what you're saying. I'm not challenging whether or not you are self-employed and independent contractor. I'm not challenging that. I think that's fine, all well and good. At some point, just like a doctor starting his own practice, he has to count up the cost of what it means to be that independent person that calls the shots.
Right.
Yes,
the average doctor in the United States makes $85,000 a year.
The way the economy is out there, I don't see too many other opportunities for what I do.
Right.
I don't see
and
the opportunity out there. It's either this or nothing. And I'm a man of a certain age. I'm not necessarily comfortable. I'm really not comfortable with going to work somewhere and my supervisor is 15, 20 years younger than me and doesn't know jack that I know. You know, so...
Brown, it's like that supermarket analogy that Tracy made. It's really about the unions. It's not the government coming down on those people who own 40 stores. And besides, I would assume by the time you have 40 stores, you're making more than $20 a day because they had to finance that growth somehow. So it wasn't a clear same-as argument that we started with, one person trying to live his dream and start out. They're not the same. By the time you got 40 stores, if you don't have money savvy, you're a fool.
Well, you
right.
know what?
You're,
and
you're
that store that she's talking about that's been in business 50 years, and it's just a mom-and-pop shop, I'm sure they have a very loyal clientele.
And I'm sure they have a huge family trust fund, and it almost doesn't matter whether they make any money or not. Everybody in the family is L.L. Bean. They're all rich.
Well, that's why I agree.
Ideally speaking, everybody's situation doesn't fall under that category, but they have a strong, loyal clientele or a huge trust fund. You're talking which is what
by knowing how to service your customer, okay, and doing good and fulfilling everything that you say you're going to do, you can build a loyal customers. And as long as you have loyal, good customers and you're servicing the account, no matter what the business is, they're going to keep coming back to you.
And
yep.
you can build
like
and, on top of what Brown
agree,
said. Hold on a second.
And once you have that,
obstacles
can be overcome.
Let me add to what you just said. You can build a community off of what you just said. Loyal customers, one major spot in one community, and that's all you need.
Why are we worried about this competing national or even statewide? Just stay with your community.
Man.
Be successful.
Okay, all right, let's have that conversation. Build your community. Now, you're offering a product that, guess what, someone at some point is possibly going to work for you doing the same thing, same trade, same skills, same mindset. All right, now what happens when this person says, well, you know what? I think I can start my own company. So now you're not competing with the national, nationwide big corporation. You're competing with someone that's right in your local community.
And that's called capitalism, sir.
Now what
that's
happens? That's real.
That happens.
That's capitalism. That's just part of the process.
And it's survival of the fittest. If
you're
you're
going to perish.
Your community benefits by the winner.
Right. Whoever's able to offer the best prices, offer the cleanest product, the best product, the best-selling product, or the lowest prices product wins. It's called capitalism. It gets rid of greed.
Right. That's the name. That's the way the game is played. You know,
game. Right. So now you're not just competing with the regular corporations. You're competing with the guy that lives two houses down from you.
And it's
competition
out there. That's what it's all about. Beating the competition.
You can't get mad at the corporations that are doing it.
I'm not mad.
You know, it's really funny because people complain about monopolies all the time, but then we talk about small businesses. They want one guy in the neighborhood to be the king of, and
that's
they want
point,
him to be the
Mike.
Monopoly, controlling the prices. Most
that's
of the poor communities
exactly.
in this country that have only one of something go there. The people complain, go, man, the guy's gouging us on price. Because he knows,
you know, within a 7-block radius of where I am,
yeah,
7-block radius where I am, there must be 5 or 6 barbershops. I don't go to any of them, okay?
And they're all surviving.
I drive 10 miles away, maybe 7 miles away, to deal with the people that I like that cut my hair better, that are nicer to me.
Yep.
Okay, I don't even step by the other ones because some of these barbers seem to have a prima donna attitude where you have to make an appointment and this
make
and
it,
that and the other.
Make
so,
it quick, Brown. They're about to run out of time.
Yeah, so that's my point.
Well, Brown, the girl that cuts my hair at Walmart, right,
yeah.
went on her own. She's coming to my house tomorrow for $5
right.
more than it used to cost me to drive to Walmart, and she lives and she supports herself. She put herself in college.
You
and
talking
now
like this is
for
a situation that
staff.
Everybody has.
You can do it if you want to. You can find a reason not to or a reason to. It's up to you.
I agree 100%, but it don't happen that way for everybody.
It doesn't have to happen that way for everybody because everybody won't pay the price it takes. First, you got to use your
brain,
and then you got to put your back into it.
If a blind man can do it, who the heck?
Right.
I tip my hat to you, Mike.
I do, too.
Okay, I'll only take your word for that. I can't see you doing it.
All right, take my. I don't have a hat on. I commend you. You can
well, thank
do that.
You, brother. Don't need
and,
that.
And that's sincere.
It's my thank you, bro. It's my privilege to be an American.
When
you have
bulb,
that kind of opportunity.
Okay?
Pardon?
Thomas Edison failed over 1,000 times inventing the light bulb.
1,962. He was my inspiration. What if he quit at 961? He'd
line,
be in the dark.
Thin line between failing and success. I think. When Hemingway wrote For Whom the Bell Tolls, he was turned down 43 times from publishing houses.
Chicken Soup for the Soul, the book that is the most successful book in the history of publishing. The guy's in the Guinness Book of World Records. 500 million copies sold worldwide in 42 languages. He was returned down 140 times. I listened to him yesterday on an interview, telling other, as an entrepreneur for free, as a seminar, how to get your book published.
Amazing
what
can
that?
Happen when you try.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike. Tell him what book again that was.
It's Chicken Soup for the Soul by Jack Canfield. He 140 times he was turned down by publishers, and he's in the Guinness Book of World Records. It's the most published book in the history of the world. Most successful author, 500 million copies sold of the book.
Wow, and I've never even heard of it.
And it's a great book. And the same thing, Robert Kiyosaki, he's another one. He was turned down a bazillion times.
That's
book.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Yeah, he was turned down. And John Gray, Men Are From Venus or Mars,